Good morning, everyone. Welcome to your March 8th Senate Committee on Rules. We have Senator Nelson here to testify, but if he doesn't mind, we're going to go ahead and move forward on introduce legislative concepts and bill drafts first before we get started on our course of business. The chair would move the following legislative concepts for drafting by legislative council. Number one, from the chair, a proposed Senate version of Senate Bill 2182. Number two, from the chair, changes and added provisions governing support or maintenance of a child attending school who's 18 years or older. Number three, from the chair, a proposed resolution calling on the U.S. Congress to reject plans to privatize Social Security. Number four, from the chair, a request to reintroduce House Bill 2039 as a current Senate bill. Number five, from the chair, a proposed to reintroduce House Bill 2836 relating to motor vehicle insurance charges. Number six, from Senator Devlin, proposed changes is to ORS 192 relating to the retention of genetic information by entities. Number seven, from Senator Westman, a proposed change to statutes governing Deschutes Basin water use. Number eight, from Senator Westman, proposing a pilot program for voluntary water planning management. Number nine, from Senator Westman, a proposed statute to ratify the existing water use mitigation rule adopted by the Water Resources Department. Number 10, from Senator Mona Sanderson, proposing a change to Oregon statutes that would eliminate the requirement for women receiving public assistance to obtain permit 30 days in advance of a tubal ligation. Number 11, from Senator Mona Sanderson, a proposal requiring the Secretary of State to include the calendar year in a ballot measure number. Number 12, from the chair, a proposal to change certain guidelines pertaining to medical assistance under ORS 414. Senator Ferrioli.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. On number 12, the proposal to change certain guidelines, that would be at the request of Senators Cruz, Morris, Winters, and Bruce Starr.
Great. I'm delighted.
Thank you.
I think it was their idea.
Yes, ma'am, it was.
And number 13, from Senator Ringo, a bill to clarify and specify requirements and review procedures for claims filed under Measure 37 at both the state and local levels. Number 14, from Senator Ringo, a bill to establish mechanism for raising revenue to pay compensation claims filed under Measure 37. Number 15, from the chair, proposing criteria under ORS 419B337 governing the dismissal of a commitment of award over the age of 14. Number 16, from Senator Westland, replacing Senate Bill 401 to remedy a relating clause that is too narrow to accomplish the bill's intended goals. Number 17, from the chair, the Employee Free Choice Act resolution establishing that the Oregon State Senate supports the Employee Free Choice Act. Number 18, from the chair, a request to have House Bill 2168 relating to elections drafted as a Senate bill. Submitted in addition, for the following LC requests, the motion includes LC drafts for introductions as committee members, as committee measures, LC 1369 at the request of Mark Kramer relating to temporary protective orders of restraint, LC 2992 relating to education requiring private schools to register with Department of Education, LC 3092 relating to medications that are intended to inhibit an enzyme known as, I'm not going to be able to say that one, LC 3237 relating to minors, amending Section 16, Chapter 635, Oregon Laws 2001, and LC 1482 relating to public employee retirement. With that, the chair would call the roll unless there's any further discussion. Your support of these drafting requests is simply for the purposes of drafting and introduction as committee bills, and your vote in support of them does not signify support or opposition of the substance of the measure. Is there any discussion?
And the other caveat, Madam Chair?
Senator Atkinson, and the other caveat is?
That these bills will in no way keep us here all summer.
These bills will in no way keep us here all summer. I'm not sure that's going to be our problem this session. So, any further discussion, would you please call the roll?
Senator Atkinson?
Yes.
Senator Ringo?
Aye.
Senator Shields?
Aye.
Vice Chair Ferriola?
Aye.
Chair Brown.
Chair votes aye. Motion carries. Thank you. I would like to welcome, as we start our discussion today, Senator Joanne Verger, who's going to participate as committee member. And then we have a number of legislators come on up. Sorry, Senator Nelson, you're going to have to share the glory this morning. And I just lost my committee administrator. We are, I'm going to open a public hearing and work session on the appointment of Lessa Coyne to the Oregon Forestry Board, and welcome our colleagues. Thank you, Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the opportunity to speak in this very important to vote, and I, you know, the folks are in the hearing room. We appreciate the fact that they came and the fact that you folks are willing to allow us to present our testimony and our view of the world. I view this proposed nomination as a very symbolic vote of what's going on in the legislature. We're talking about respect and integrity of the legislative process. I've handed out a letter from Lessa Coyne with my name on it that basically I think indicates the feelings, at least from my part of the country. Disappointment would be replacing Chris Hefferman, who is a constituent of mine for up in Union County. And so I have a very great interest in that because I think Mr. Hefferman has done really an excellent job and has done the things he's needed to have done. I say this is about respect and integrity of the legislative process. One of the things that the Senate President has been doing this time is sending people out on committee meetings throughout the state, establishing, you know, connection with the people. This appointment is going to go a long way to undermining that effort because I think the people are going to be looking at it and saying the system has failed them again. They want to trust what we're doing down here as a legislator, doing the right thing. And basically this nomination really just doesn't pass the test. Yesterday on the floor I spoke about the personal situation as far as Mr. Heffernan is concerned. I talked personally with him. I have his telephone number. It's 541-898-2507. That number again is 541-898-2507. I think it would be very, very good of this committee just to call him up. If you're doing your job, call him up and see how he feels about this thing. I was going to hurt him very deeply. He's very, very upset about this. He's going to survive. He'll just go on. He'll make do, but he's got to explain things to his family, his community. Why is this happening? So we have one more jaded citizen out there. So let's do one citizen at a time. And this fellow has been very upset and very deeply hurt by this. He's worked hard in this situation. He's been praised by the governor. And what I'm asking you is, would you like to be treated in this manner? I mean, you know, being the type of person that I am and a Republican that I am, it bothers me, you know. And I understand from your viewpoint, it's got to bother you when you talk about, you know, how do we treat our citizens? You just throw them out. They do a good job. They work hard. They volunteer their time. They spend their own money. They you know, they do the things they need to do, and then they're just thrown out. I also like to talk about the respect and integrity of the committee members as far as your vote is concerned. You have the power to do the right thing. You know, I think everybody's pretty much where this potentially could be a political appointment. You know, let's just be honest about it. This appointment does not pass a test. And truly, I believe there's doubt in each one of your hearts. I think there's doubt in your caucuses, too, whether this is a good appointment or not. And I think it really gives us the Oregonians a chance to respect the system again, that the system does work. They can come down here and testify and say, you know, this is not the right thing to do. So I go back to the three things, the respect and integrity for the system. You know, don't undermine the things I think the Senate President's doing. The humane treatment, the humanness that I think we should have for Chris Hefferman in this whole situation. You know, treat him decently. I don't think he's been treated decently. And I think there's a personal satisfaction in you folks doing the right thing. You know, and I can remember in the last session, I made a vote at the very end of the session that probably 999 times out of 1,000, I wouldn't make that vote. That was a tax vote. I made some commitments to people that I would not vote in that manner. But we got down, and it really was the right thing to do. I still feel good about that vote, even though the voters said, you know, Nelson, you were probably wrong about that. So I think really, you know, you're kind of in the same situation. And when you get involved in these legislative, you know, we're going through some pretty tumultuous times as far as being involved in this legislative process. And I think there are votes as you go down through the system that actually help speed the process along. And I think this nomination, if it is approved, is going to hinder that process. You know, we'll go on, we'll do our thing, but it's going to hinder how we approach the session We've built a lot of camaraderie, I think, in the Senate. I think I really appreciate the things that Senate Democrats have done as far as making, you know, making this transition and making us do things. But to me, this vote is it's symbolic, and it's going to undermine a lot of the good things that have been done. And I would urge that you do not move this nomination forward. And I appreciate the opportunity to be here and speak in front of you and to at least express my opinions on how I feel about this and some expressions of the constituents in my area. So, thank you.
Thank you, Senator Nelson. We appreciate your comments. Any questions for Senator Nelson? Okay. Thank you. Representative Gilman, why don't you come on up?
I do have to go to a committee meeting.
We're going
to
let you go.
These folks will take care of things.
Representative Burley, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Representative Chuck Burley, House District 54. I appreciate this opportunity to share my comments on the governor's recent nomination to the Board of Forestry. I am a certified forester, and I've spent my entire career working on resource policy issues in both the public and private sectors. I am currently a member of Governor Kulongoski's Eastside Forest Advisory Panel. As you know, the Board of Forestry makes policy and provides vision to management and protection of 11 million acres of state-owned and private forest land. And the question I have, which echoes Senator Nelson's comments, is why the governor is not nominating for reappointment Chris Heffernan, whose term expires on April 3. Mr. Heffernan is a rancher and farmer from North Powder, where he owns and manages over 1,300 acres of grazing and forest lands. He owns the North Slope Hay Company and manages the H&H Ranches, an alfalfa farm and livestock grazing operation. His family ranch earned the national honor of the 2002 Rural Sportsman Big Game Management Farm of the Year, as well as the Wildlife Stewardship Farm of the Year. In addition, he has served on various boards and committees involved with family farms and forest lands, as well as the Regional Fire Protection Board. Mr. Heffernan's credentials clearly highlight his qualifications to serve on the Board of Forestry. Losing Mr. Heffernan means that the board will lose its only member that brings the unique perspective of family forest landowners in eastern Oregon. There has been no indication of any reason why Mr. Heffernan should not be reappointed, and I'm getting tired of eastern Oregon taking the back seat, particularly on matters relating to resource issues. I was encouraged when the governor in his State of the State address said, "I am not turning my back on traditional industries. Timber and agriculture are essential to Oregon's economy. And for many of our rural communities, timber and agriculture is the economy." However, I don't believe the governor is keeping with this statement by not reappointing Mr. Heffernan to the Board of Forestry. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I respectfully urge you to send a signal that eastern Oregon is an important part of our state, and that Mr. Heffernan should be reappointed to the Board of Forestry. Thank you.
Thank you.
Question, Madam Chairman.
Senator Ferriale.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Chris Heffernan is a member of Oregon's Family Forest Land Owners. And if folks don't know who that is, then they should look at the publication that was produced, in fact, by the Family Forest Land Owners to describe what their objectives are. Why is it important, Mr. Burley, Representative Burley, to have a family forest landowner represented on the Board of Forestry? And if that's not in statute and not in rule, why is it that we have a family forestry member on the Board of Forestry?
As I said, Madam Chair, Senator Fraioli, it's a unique perspective, and it's particularly important for the east side. The state, as you know, is divided up into three regions for forest policy, and the whole east side is one of those three regions. And it's done that way because of the uniqueness of our forest types and the vegetative and the whole climate and everything over there, and that's what Mr. Heffernan brings with his experience working the land, managing not only for the commodity products that he produces, but all of the other benefits as well, such as the clean water and the wildlife habitat.
Senator Ferriale.
It's not in statute and it's not in rule. Is there a tradition about having a small woodland owner or a family forest landowner on the board?
Madam Chair, Senator Ferriale, yes, I believe that is the case. That's a tradition, yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Kropp.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. It's my pleasure to extend my very brief remarks to you today. I'm here to passionately oppose the appointment and would ask that the committee would would truly consider their actions here today. And I'm just really just going to speak from you from my heart. I will tell you that if you do not reappoint Chris Heffernan, you will leave a void that Lesa Coyne cannot fill. And I speak from you from the perspective of having taken a trip to Eastern Oregon and spent a day with Chris and his family on his ranch and his farm. And I will tell you that I have been so impressed by what I saw that they have achieved as a family in, I think, profoundly impacting their environment that they control in what I think is a very, very responsible way in terms of the big game projects. He works very closely with the Department of Fish and Wildlife. They have feeding stations that prevent the elk from going further down into the lowlands, creating problems for farmers in the alfalfa fields. I see his the solar project that he constructed that automatically pumps water for the cattle. I've seen how that they've kept the cattle out of the streams by their ranching, their methods of ranching where they turn the cattle from one particular part of their farm to the other so that it doesn't overgraze. That's very responsible. And I was so impressed with that, and I thought to myself, you know, that I'm a fifth-generation Oregon farmer, and he wants to be responsible for his generation of children and grandchildren and what they leave behind them. I think that's what we want on the Board of Forestry. I think we want someone who's truly committed as a family and understanding the unique needs of those on the east side of the state. Lesa Coyne is very well known for his writings. I disagree with many of them. He cannot have that perspective because he simply does not live that life. And I think if you appoint Lesa Coyne in Chris's place, you will lose that very unique perspective. You will lose a man who has done, I think, a marvelous job. And if you were to tour his farm, you would absolutely agree with me. And I would just urge you, look deep within your hearts. This truly is a very, very sad direction, because you will lose a passionate advocate for proper conservation of our natural resources. He's proven it to be successful, and I think this would be a disappointing mistake for all, and thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Gilman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I didn't even come prepared to speak. I just wanted to be here to observe, but I will say a couple of words because that's what politicians do. I agree with all the previous speakers. We have a wonderful person serving on that board right now. And to bump him off and place Lesa Coyne there is a bad decision. I happen to live in Southern Oregon, and I read Lesa Coyne's blurbs in the Mail Tribune, and I disagree with I adamantly disagree with his philosophy about forest management. And I think he would be a bad choice for the Forestry Board. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Ringo.
I haven't heard anybody level criticism at Chris Heffernan. I don't think this appointment is about whether Chris Heffernan did or did not do a good job. This appointment is about restoring balance to the Board of Forestry. It's about placing somebody on the board who's going to bring strong conservation credentials. Right now, 5 out of the 7 members on the Board of Forestry have a close financial tie to the timber industry. That's wrong. We need to restore the balance and place somebody on the board who has a greater respect for the conservation values that are so dear to the people of this state. So I this is not about Chris Heffernan. It's about bringing balance to the board. I ask you to keep that in mind.
Madam Chair.
Representative Crabb.
Thank you. And Senator Ringo, I appreciate your comments. I would urge you to, I mean this, Senator, if you were to go to Chris Heffernan's farm, his ranch, and spend some time with him and look at the things that he's done, I think you would truly have to modify that statement, because I think you would be so deeply impressed with his commitment to conservation.
This has to do with the management
Senator Ringo, I'm going to call you out of order.
Thank you,
Let Representative Cutt finish, please.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and you're very kind. And Senator Ringo, I know you feel very passionately about this. To call Chris Heffernan someone with deep ties to the forestry industry would be a misnomer, truly. He is a generational farmer and rancher who is doing this, and again, I would urge you to spend some time with him because you will understand his motivations. He's doing this for his family. It's been his dream to manage and own the facility that he does. And he started with nothing, and he worked his way up. He's been so responsible. And I think you would, again, you would, if you had the opportunity to spend time with him, you would come away with a very different view. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
No, Senator Ringo, I'm going to ask this panel to be excused at this point in time. We have two other legislators who wish to testify. Is that correct? I would ask, we've given a lot of leeway to my colleagues here. The chair would ask that folks who are planning on testify limit remarks to the appointment in front of us, which is the appointment of Mr. Lessa Coyne. At this point in time, we'd also ask, since we have 3 pages of testimony, that folks limit your testimony to a couple of minutes. Thank you, Representative Anderson, Representative Smith. We appreciate you being here this morning, and welcome.
Go ahead, folks. Thank you, Madam Chair and Vice Chair. For the record, I am State Representative Greg Smith, representing District 57, which includes Union, Wallowa, Morrow, and the better parts of Umatilla County. Please let me say how pleased I am to be here this morning. I know time is of the essence. You folks are busy, and I need to be back down in committee, so I'll make this very quick. I just want to share with you a quick perspective, and that is Lessa Coyne is a fine man. He's an honorable man, and I truly believe he's a man that wants to do what is best for the state of Oregon, but I don't believe he's the right man for the job at this time and at this point in Oregon's history. Mr. Heffernan is currently serving in that position and has done an admirable job. He has served with integrity, and he has served with honor, and he truly has tried to bring a common sense approach to the board and has tried to operate in a manner that would represent mainstream Oregonians and tried to come to the middle of the road. And because of that, you know, I think he truly deserves another opportunity to continue to serve. And so I just present that to you, that you have two fine choices, one who has done a good job, and really this doesn't warrant his removal from that board. And so I just bring that to you. The current person in that position is a good person.
Thank you, Representative Smith. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Gordon Anderson. I'm in District 3, which is the home of the Biscuit Fire. And I come to you asking that we stay with the direction that the Senate and the House have been taking in terms of evidence-based science. We need scientists to best guide the forestry issues that we have. Mr. Heffernan is definitely a scientist in terms of knowing the forest. Mr. Coyne has a wealth of knowledge, but he has not been in the area of actual scientific activity. Let me just share one quick experience from my former life when I was in California many years ago. Governor Brown tried to change the balance on the Board of Dental Examiners and appointed quite a number of public members who had no understanding of the science and art of dentistry, and it threw that board into confusion for several years until it got changed back again. I think you'd be doing the same thing here in taking people who are knowledgeable in the science and replacing them with people who are less knowledgeable of the science.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you both very much. We appreciate you being here. Would Mr. Lessa Coyne come forward, please? Thank you and welcome. Would you please introduce yourself for the record and tell us a little bit about why you would like to serve on the Board of Forestry?
Sure. As soon as I find my eyes here, they're... Madam Chairman, let me begin by wishing you a good morning and members of the committee as well, and I appreciate the opportunity to come before you today. My name is Lester Coyne. I reside at 444 Glory Lane in Ashland, Oregon, a part of the state that's often considered the other Oregon. I am a retired nine-term U.S. congressman. I have been out of office in public life, private life, for 12 years. I represented Oregon's first congressional district and was the former dean of the Oregon U.S. House delegation. From 1973 to 1974, I was House Majority Leader in the Oregon Legislature. I recently retired after more than a half decade as the Glenn L. Jackson Professor of Political Science at Southern Oregon University. While at SOU, I headed up the Coyne Institute for Economic, Environmental, and Civic Studies, the work of which included a major conflict resolution workshop on forest policy and the convening of expert scientists from all over the country to deal with the fundamental problems facing forests and forestry, not only in the Northwest but throughout the country. Participants in that workshop, the conflict resolution workshop, included such people as miners, that's M-I-N-E-R-S, Madam Chairman, environmentalists, Main Street merchants, loggers, union leaders, and government agency personnel. I am now a full-time writer for periodicals and have two books in progress. I did not ask for a seat on the Board of Forestry, but I am honored to have been nominated by Governor Kulongoski. If confirmed, I will work to fulfill two goals he said he had in mind when he appointed me. The governor told me that the first thing he wanted me to do was to raise the visibility of the Forestry Board, and I have to say, Madam Chairman, I think I have already accomplished that. Secondly, the governor told me that he wanted to bring my public experience, which is steeped in forestry, not only on Forest Service lands, but also BLM lands and elsewhere, bring that public experience to the board to better reflect the diverse views of Oregonians. As the Oregonian editorialized last week when it endorsed my nomination, during my years in the Congress, I was immersed in forest issues. Among them were wilderness, wild and scenic rivers, mining, dams, endangered species, and timber industry economics. I sometimes agreed with the environmental cause. Other times I sided with the timber industry. In my work, I always looked at issues with an open mind, with the understanding that neither side is always right, nor is either side always wrong. For 12 years, sitting on the Interior Appropriations Committee, I set timber sales levels for the Pacific Northwest every year for 12 years. That, along with my environmental accomplishments, have earned me top awards from such disparate groups as the Sierra Club, the American Forest and Pulp Association, American Rivers, and Oregon's O&C counties. That approach, which is balanced and open-minded and fair, is the approach, Madam Chairman and members of the committee, I will bring to the Board of Forestry. I thank you very much for offering, being able to offer my statement. and I'm willing to take your questions.
Thank you. Mr. Cohen, you came out in support of ballot measure 34, which called for a portion of the state forest to be held in reserves. Would you throw out the current Tillamook Clatsop forest plan and start over?
No, I would not. I think that what needs to be done is to follow the structure-based management plan. That structure-based management plan by the Department of Forestry is one in which is one that, however, even the author, Chad Oliver, who is a Yale University professor who authored that the sustained-based structure-based management, said is best when it is mixed with areas of non-logged areas as well as logged areas in order to create the important healthy aspects of a standing national of a standing forest. And that would be my approach. Now, this is something I might add that these are decisions I might add about that will have to be decided by the Board of Forestry within its consensus process. And as you know, and I think members of the committee know, that the Board does operate by consensus, and it would in this case, too.
Can we support the current plan, and for the most part, for the Tillamook and Clatsop State Forests? The revenue they receive is important to our rural economies. Would you actively work to guarantee an adequate revenue stream from state timber for the counties?
Yes, I would. I think the counties have a recognizable interest in revenues from timber sales in those counties. Is crucial to them. I would work to find common ground with them to establish a revenue flow that they could depend upon into the future. And at the same time, I would work as a member of this board to help them develop other timber products, lumber products, wood products, and uses that will help them develop their economy even further.
Thank you. A couple more questions, Mr. Cohen. Are you against clear cutting, or are you against clear cutting in most cases?
I'm not against clear cutting when it is environmentally detrimental. And there are clear cuts I've seen that are very wisely located, that do not represent, they are tailored in size so that you don't have massive siltation streaming into the rivers, endangering fish runs. So I've seen timber clear cuts that fit that category. What I object to are massive clear cuts that take into account no other such things except for getting out the timber and on the most massive basis possible. Shelter stack logging as an alternative to clear cutting often is a very viable alternative. I've seen it work. I've been in the field, and I believe that it does work.
A couple more questions. Are you against salvage logging?
I am not. Okay. I am against excesses in salvage logging, and I'm sure before this hearing is over we will talk about what one of the legislators who came before you a moment ago talked about, and that's the biscuit sale. I think that's an abomination, and I'll get into those reasons then. But I am not against salvage logging per se. I think that it ought to be, as I'll say in a moment if we get into this, salvage logging, particularly on the biscuit, ought to avoid old-growth preserves, roadless areas, and other sensitive areas. even environmentalists who negotiated with the timber industry, with the Bush administration, and the state of Oregon had a seat at the table, agreed with that approach. The offer they advocated, and perhaps could have gone further, a 96 million board foot salvage sale for the Biscuit fire area. That's about seven times more than has been typically logged pre-fire in that national forest.
How would you approach the Biscuit fire salvage operation to get trees out in a timely environmental and economic manner versus what is happening, frankly?
Well, I think the best way to look at the Biscuit fire is how it has been mismanaged and from the outset. And this is a good time to talk about the Biscuit fire. It didn't have to be this way. We didn't have to have the sides at each other's throats as we do today. The fundamental problem with the Biscuit fire is the John Sessions report, a report by a professor of forestry at the University of Oregon. That report was not subjected to conventional peer review. His team did not have on its staff a single wildfire biologist. Top national experts in those fields have criticized Dr. Sessions for ignoring and failing to evaluate the cost of the ecological costs as well as the economic costs of his plan. I noted with great interest that Dr. Sessions said as much in an interview with the Eugene Register Guard. He said the following. He said, we decided to not evaluate soil erosion, water quality, or recreation because we didn't have time to do it. I think that's a very significant problem. And what's worse is that the Biscuit fire ultimate cut overrode by a substantial margin the recommendations of a local forest supervisor, a man whose job it is to be on the land with his staff and to evaluate what is a sustainable and a responsible cut. The local supervisor recommended 96 million board feet. He avoided roadless areas, roadless preserves, old growth preserves. I was dumbstruck, frankly, Madam Chairman, members of the committee, that after some delay, the Sessions report was rushed through and became the other bookend for a recommendation that went back to Washington, D.C. It tripled. I want to repeat that. Tripled the recommended cut of a local forest supervisor. I have a news source who is impeccable, who told me, who's very close to in the Siskiyou Forest, who told me that difference came from pressure, from political pressure from Washington, D.C. Now, so we have a plan here that is one of the largest timber sales in the history of the Forest Service, 80% of which is in old growth preserves, roadless areas, and other ecologically sensitive areas. On top of that, the politically conservative organization called Taxpayers for Common Sense said that the receipts from the sale can't pay for the costs, that we will have taxpayers will be expected to pick up and subsidize what I would call a reckless plan, to the tune of $102 million. Other than that, it's probably a perfect plan.
Thank you. Could you talk about how political you think the Board of Forestry should be during its decision-making process?
It should not be political. I think it should be independent. And I think one of the reasons the governor wants to see more balance on that board is that the people of Oregon deserve to have more public members on that board, as Senator Ringo was saying earlier, more public representatives who have no financial interests in the forest industry, so that we have no axe grinding from one side or the other. I think there's a question between governance and advocacy. I've been an advocate. I've also been in governance. I know the difference. And my record, which I'll be happy to explain as we go through the questions, demonstrates just that.
Thank you, Mr. Coyne. Senator Ringo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, I want to say thank you. Thank you for being willing to serve on the board.
Thank you, Senator.
Take time out of your private life for that public service. And I also want to thank you for your willingness to run the gauntlet of this hearing and kind of put yourself out there a little bit. So I really appreciate that. I wanted to find out a little bit more about the conflict resolution process that you managed in Ashland. I have an intense interest in understanding how we can reduce the angst and the anger in the timber wars, and I wanted to just see philosophically where you were and what you would suggest in that regard.
Well, Senator, we learned a great deal in this conflict resolution workshop. The first thing we did was make sure we brought in everyone, representatives from almost every conceivable point of view. We had miners from the Illinois Valley. We had tree setters from Ashland. We had downtown businessmen. I went through the list earlier. It's important that everybody be at the table. Getting them to the table can be difficult, but we managed to do so. A process of raising issues and having discussions among the members, breaking down into small groups, going into larger groups, and then having discussions between these with people who are at polar ends of some of these issues is extremely important. And one of the things we found out is that if you have what we called an interpreter, and we hired a professional facilitator for this, an interpreter, so that when the miner jumps on a wilderness advocate, the miner has an interpreter who says to the environmental advocate, Kelpie, what I hear George saying is that he's got a way of life. You know, he's done this all of his life. His expectations for, so forth. And it takes, what it does is take the venom out of the question. And it provides a fact-based question. And then when the response comes, which usually has quite a sharp edge and sometimes a great deal of anger, there's an interpreter that does the same thing back. We found over 3 days some amazing things. At the end of 3 days, we didn't solve the forest crisis. Otherwise, this would be very quiet here.
Right.
But what we found was something very interesting, and it was symbolized by what happened on the last day of the session. The miner that I'm talking about stood up, and he went to the middle of the room, and he asked the environmentalist to join him. And he said to the group, "This is a person who I have never met. When I walked into this room, I was afraid, I was enraged, and I didn't want to be anywhere close to her. In fact, I sat on the other end of the room." He said, "But I feel after all of this time that though we still disagree, I know her. I feel I can pick up a phone and call her and discuss our differences without shouting at each other." Well, Senator and members of the committee, I would suggest to you that the first step towards getting to common understanding is to achieve just that. A levels of civility in discourse much of which has been absent in this confirmation, as a matter of fact, but to a level of civility that enables people not to demonize each other, but to recognize that they have different points of view and to try to get inside the skins of the others. It was a very, very successful workshop, and the questionnaires we sent out to one and all came back 100% in favor and very enthusiastic.
Thank you.
Senator Ringo.
Follow-up, Madam Chair. Thank you. That was an interesting response. A question specifically about the management of our state forests. I have an intense interest in making sure that those forests can be used for a wide variety of purposes. There are almost 500,000 people living in Washington County now who like to use the state forests for recreation. Do you see that we will be able to manage our state forests for a wide variety of use that respects recreation, water quality, habitat preservation, at the same time maintain our obligations to the counties for revenues for their local government and for their schools, and to produce jobs? Is that possible? Can we do that?
Yes, I think it is. It's not going to be easy, but it will be worth it. And I think it can be done with good faith on all sides. And certainly I intend to put my shoulder to that wheel, Senator.
Okay.
I respect the concept of structure-based management, in which logging takes place in the forest over time. But even the author of structure-based management, as I said before, Chad Oliver, said that a mix of non-logging areas within structure-based management is important for the overall well-being of a forest. Now, this is something, having said that, that will have to be taken up and decided by the Board of Forestry in its consensus process, and I expect to be a full participant in that.
Okay. Thank you very much. That's all I have.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chairman. I have a number of questions, but I'd like to start, if I have your permission, with an opening statement.
This is not a trial, Senator Farioli, but if you wish to make a comment, I can't prevent you from doing that.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Just the other day, I read an essay in the Metro and Mail Tribune by a Southern Oregon timber lobbyist. He wrote that everything will go to waste in the old biscuit fire if the timber industry does not use bulldozers and heavy logging equipment in roadless areas to cut what's there. Science shows that nothing in nature is wasted. The lobbyist is either uninformed, misinformed, or most likely is knowingly trying to dupe an unsuspecting public in an effort to make money for his masters. He and others like him want to squeeze all that is wild out of your national forests to make them logging farms and, incidentally, more vulnerable, not less vulnerable, to future wildfire. And yet these forests belong to you, not them. I'm planning to spend some time getting behind the headlines and standard journalistic analysis of such issues, and to document how irresponsible moneyed interests are manipulating language and symbols to get the non-elite public to work against its own interests. It's a dangerous trend, and the biggest unreported story in both Oregon and the country. So, dear listener, I'll see you up the road.
Not appropriate. Please, no clapping. Thank you.
Well, Madam Chairman, here we are up the road. I would suggest that Mr. Coyne has gotten behind the headlines. Madam Chairman, I think I'd like to ask about who the non-elite public is that Mr. Coyne would help inform.
My reference there, of course, is the general public who does not sit in on hearings like this, who hear rivaling scientific reports, Senator, and have a hard time because of the busyness of their lives making decisions between which science is sound and which science isn't. So when they hear something like someone say from the small woodlot woodlands owners association, which was published in article in Senator Ridger's newspaper, the Coos Bay World, that Lesser Coin has an agenda. It's it is to stop all logging. The public, which has no opportunity to understand the record that I produced over 24 years in the Congress, has no basis in which to make an evaluation. They might be inclined to agree with that. I think it's those who don't follow day in and day out the work of forestry and have, for reasons that are understandable, no memory of, for example, what I did in the Congress to ensure the financial and economic integrity of the timber industry in the Northwest. It's those people that I think are ill-served. And the elites who spend their lives lobbying or dealing with this know the difference.
So, Madam Chairman, I conclude that you would consider yourself one of the elites.
I don't consider myself one of the elites. I consider myself an experienced policymaker who served as the House Majority Leader in this session, in this legislature, served on the most important committee on forests, the Appropriations Subcommittee on the Interior Affairs. I consider myself experienced, not elite. Nor do I think because because you serve on this committee, Senator, think that you are elite. I would doubt that very seriously.
Madam Chairman, follow up. What is a massive clear cut?
Massive clear cuts are ones that extend over large numbers of acres. I'm not going to assign an acreage to that. But I have seen them in Southern Oregon. I've seen them around the country, and there are ones that could have been handled with a great deal more sophistication towards other values in the forests, which are damaged by the excesses of the large clear cuts.
Madam Chairman, if this candidate is confirmed, he'll help administer the Oregon Forest Practices Act, and I'd just like to ask the candidate if he is aware that there are limitations to the size of clear cuts.
Oh, yes, I am.
And so please explain what is a massive clear cut in relation to the statutory limitations and limitations by rule.
The state forester, Marvin Brown, told me that the average clear cuts in the Tillamookan classic forest, for example, are 40 to 50 acres. I don't call that massive.
And Madam Chairman, I guess I'm trying to drill into the question about whether or not the applicant even knows what the size limitation of the clear cut is.
I do.
It is?
120 acres.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. So massive is sort of a relative term. It's almost an emotional term.
It's emotional for a lot of people.
Okay. The Forest Practices Act, Madam Chairman, to which land in Oregon does it apply?
Senator, you know very well that applies to private industrial forest operators.
And, Madam Chairman, small woodlands?
And small woodland owners, too, excuse me.
And industrial forest lands, Madam Chairman?
I just said that.
Senator Ferriero, you may proceed.
Public forest lands, Madam Chairman?
I beg your pardon?
Public forest lands, federal forest lands. Does the Oregon Forest Practices Act apply to federal forest lands?
Of course it does not.
Madam Chairman, by agreement, the federal forest lands meet or exceed the Oregon Forest Practices Act, and that is why, in fact, a thorough working knowledge of forestry practices are necessary on the board. So, Madam Chairman, I just suggest that I agree with
the
applicant. He's not a qualified forester.
I appreciate your comments. Okay.
Madam Chairman, I would simply say, obviously, I'm not a forester. I'm a policymaker. And what we need on this board are not, is not a board stacked with foresters. What we need are informed citizens who bring in experience that can reflect the public interest.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, any further questions?
Senator Farioli.
Referring to the chair, I thought that was our protocol, Madam Chairman.
Senator Farioli, I'm a woman, in case you hadn't noticed, and you continue to call me Madam Chairman, so I'd appreciate you at least getting my gender correct if you're going to continue to refer to me.
You can call me
Madam Chair.
You can call me Sir.
I didn't mean to make any reference to your gender.
Thank you.
The question that occurs to me, because I represent a district that is involved in timber and cattle, is whether or not you have an opinion about cattle grazing on state lands, particularly state-managed forest lands. And in particular, could you define the term cowshwitz?
You're referring to by the term cowshwitz, you're referring to a commentary I wrote, which described outside of Los Angeles one of the most massive cattle feedlots I've ever seen. You can smell it 15 miles away on I-5. These are cattle that are kept in the feedlot. There are thousands of them, perhaps tens of thousands of them, and with tongue-in-cheek, Senator, I referred to that particular cattle lot, feeding lot, as cowshwitz.
An unfortunate reference.
I'm sorry to think so.
The question is whether or not you would support or oppose grazing on public lands that are managed by the Oregon Department of Forestry.
I have no opposition to grazing on forest lands. I think grazing needs to take place in carefully prescribed areas. I know down in Southwest Oregon the Siskiyou Cascade Siskiyou National Monument, grazing is one of the issues that Senator Atkinson will understands this, and the BLM is coming with a proposal that will describe whether grazing is compatible with the purposes of the national monument there. I'm waiting for that report, and that's the approach I generally take on issues of this kind.
Madam Chair, question about the relationship between Board of Forestry members and the current Director of the Department of Forestry.
Senator Farioli, please proceed.
Mr. Quinn, you've been very critical of State Forester Marvin Brown. You basically characterized him as somebody who is incapable of being neutral. And I'd just like to hear, how did you form that opinion?
Give me that citation, Senator.
In a radio commentary, you basically quoted someone from whose background is far from neutral. I've become quite a reader of your commentaries.
Well, I'm quite sure you have.
We've gotten a couple of years worth of your Jefferson radio commentary, which we posted on the web for folks to review.
I'm aware of that.
It's quite interesting. Anyway, the criticisms were that you felt that Marvin Brown wasn't at all a neutral person, and I was wondering how you formed that opinion.
I would have preferred someone with greater environmental credentials as well as forestry credentials. But since that time, and I think it's important to say this when you do have a change of opinion, I think that since that time, in all of the experience I've had leading up to this, after this nomination and leading up to this confirmation hearing, I've had frequent conversations with Marvin Brown, and I have found him to be a thoughtful man, a fair man, and one who's forthcoming with the with information that I've needed. So that would have been a comment that I would no longer make.
So, Madam Chair, you've changed your opinion of Marvin Brown.
I don't think changing one's opinion is a sin or a gross character flaw. I'm sure, Senator, you change your opinion on matters as well. I think I should be held by the same standard.
I agree. Mr. Cronin, I think changing one's opinion is not at all a sin. As a matter of fact, it should happen more often in this
bill. I agree with that.
It does. Madam Chair, a question about gray wolves.
Senator Farioli.
Oregon is attempting to deal with the issue of the introduction of gray wolves, and that will have a tremendous impact on management of public lands, management of forest lands, and management of agricultural lands in my part of the state. And we've been very vocal about the introduction of wolves and quite pointed in your criticism of ranchers on that issue. I'd just like to hear you expand on your philosophy relative to gray wolves.
Excuse me, Senator. I didn't hear the end of your question.
I just would like to hear you expand on your philosophy about the introduction of gray wolves into Oregon.
Yeah, well, first of all, let me make the point that I'm not critical of all ranchers. I'm critical of ranchers who out of a lack of knowledge might exaggerate the perceived danger of the introduction of wolves. I've had experience in the Yellowstone National Forest, where I worked with an organization called Yellowstone Ecosystem Studies. These are people who did the baseline study pre-wolf, which means prior to the wolf's introduction into the greater Yellowstone ecosystem. And they have found that the introduction of the wolf has had very, very laudable effects on that ecosystem, with minimal damage to livestock. They have found that the wolf has thinned and dispersed coyote populations. Because of that, working down the food chain, it's had a cascading effect down, a positive effect down the food chain. Because of that, there are more voles, which are the prey of eagles and other raptors. They have found that wolves call elk herds. Thinning, of course, as nature does, the weakest of the population. That only strengthens the herd and creates a gene pool that makes sure that the elk population is stronger. At the same time, because the wolf has culled that population, wonderful things have happened in riparian areas, which is something, as you know, Senator, is very important when one considers public lands, if you care about fish, endangered fish, and other related species. Overgrazing was a major problem in the Yellowstone ecosystem. And so wolves have had a cascading down effect that's been very, very positive. Livestock losses, as you must know, have been compensated by defenders of wildlife. I believe the proposal stands as an offer here in the state of Oregon. And so I do not subscribe to the idea that the mere introduction of the wolf is a detrimental effect to either the ecology of the state or because of the compensation for what limited takes the wolf makes to livestock growers.
Madam Chair, any follow-up?
Senator Farioli.
Madam Chair, excuse me. Would you support habitat designation for wolves in Oregon on state-owned lands or lands that are fall under the jurisdiction of the Oregon Forest Practices Act?
Senator, I haven't thought about that, and so I wouldn't want to say. I just don't know. I'd have to study that, and obviously, if that should come up, it would be a question for the entire board. operating and making decisions based on its consensus approach. The board, as you know, does operate by consensus.
It does. I guess, Madam Chair, my concern in that regard is that the applicant seems to be very pro Wolf. It doesn't seem to be a balanced approach to me. Madam Chair, I would just love to continue my line of questioning, and I've got lots more, but I think I finish with one and allow other members their opportunity to have a dialogue with the applicant.
Thank you, Senator Ferriello.
It seems that Mr. Arcone has been very ecumenical in his criticism, and one of the people that has been most critical of is Governor Kulongoski. And I was just looking over a commentary that you made on 41603, and April 16th, 2003. And it's titled Kulongoski versus Kulongoski. I think you remember the piece. Basically, your stand on this is that I'm trying to imagine, and I'm quoting, I'm trying to imagine, say, FDR submitting a World War II budget that admits that it would lead to a retreat in Europe, or JFK launching a space program that he announced would not get off the ground. Maybe Kulongoski thinks you don't have to make progress so long as you're honest about it. Kulongoski is betting that if he and the legislature whack the budget long enough, there will arise from the grassroots such an upwelling of interest in a general tax increase that Salem would have to respond by passing one. Wrong. People never asked to be taxed, but they agreed to be taxed given a compelling vision for a better future. Great governors know that's part of their job description. But you know what hurts? But now one wonders if Kulongoski has recovered after all. He won't risk ridicule from the political right, but he wants the rest of us to know that failing to do so hurts Oregon. But you know what hurts worse? Watching a politician do what he thinks is wrong. I just wondered if you had had an opportunity to discuss watching a politician do what he thinks is wrong with this governor.
Well, Senator, what you left out of that statement was the news hook. That news hook, as you can read, was that the governor at that time offered an education budget, K-12, and offered up to the legislature a second budget in which he said it's going to drastically harm K-12 education. So that's the context of the comment it's hard for me to imagine, say, an FDR offering a budget that he admitted would lead to the retreat from Europe. When you're writing commentaries, you state things in ways that are memorable to make your point. Now, let me just say this to you. I don't find anything whatsoever untoward or odd about disagreeing with another politician, including a friend in this case, Ted Kulongoski, who I have known for 30 years. The governor knows and has read every one of those same columns. He read them before he nominated me. And you know what I think one of the greatest virtues of this governor is, Senator? It's that he has tolerance for diversity. It's a cornerstone of democracy. And I would just simply suggest to you, sir, that if democracy is good enough for Iran, it ought to be good enough for this committee, this legislature, and the Board of Forestry.
Madam Chair, I appreciate the commentary, and that's what we heard was commentary. But I would just suggest to this applicant, if he is confirmed, he will have a direct opportunity to participate in education funding, because it's the Board of Forestry that considers how forest lands in Oregon are operated and whether or not they are operated sustainably and whether they're operated for the benefit of the Common School Fund for children. And the way to accomplish that, I would submit to the applicant, is to make sure that we have an increasing and sustainable harvest off of our public lands.
So I can't disagree with the last comment.
I would hope that you would not, Mr. Coyne.
If you'd let me finish, Senator.
I thought I was trying to finish, Mr. Coyne.
I can't disagree with the need, when you think of the revenues and receipts to go to the schools, the need for sustainable forestry. And that's the key.
Madam Chairman, thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator Farrioli. Thank you, Mr. Coyne. I think there are a few more questions from the panel. Senator Atkinson, and then we'll move to Senator Verger.
Thank you, non-gender chairperson Brown.
Touche.
Thank you very much, Congressman, for coming. I actually have a list of questions here, but you've slowly been working your way all the way through them. In fact, last night at dinner, a Republican and a Democrat from our chamber came and asked me to ask you questions, and you've covered your both of them that they asked for, namely were salvage of the biscuit fire. Interestingly, I think there's 150 protesters now 4 years later protesting yesterday, which I think is very unfortunate.
Mm-hmm.
Most of that wood is rotted. I think we might have different approaches on that salvage, but I think we can both agree that that's a tragedy, that it, what value was there is greatly damaged.
And I, Senator, if I may, I think that's very sad, but I think it is a an unfortunate consequence of the way that plan came together, which I described earlier.
Thank you. You've also commented on the Northwest Forest Plan, so I'm not going to go back down that. One quick question. In the opening comments, you you mentioned, I think, the Pulp Association. Was that endorsing you or
Past endorsement? I simply said that over the course of my career, which was 18 years in the Congress, for various accomplishments I made, I won awards from a variety of groups, including the Sierra Club, American Rivers, two environmental organizations, the ONC counties, whose timber sale program many members of this audience may not remember, but which I saved in the recession in 1982 by legislation. So I've won top awards from a disparate number of groups, and it's because I believe of my balanced approach. I am no one's boy. I will follow the facts where they lead. I have seen environmentalists fundamentally wrong and have not hesitated to say so. I have seen the industry fundamentally wrong, and I won't hesitate to say that either. And so it's that balanced approach, I think, that created the those awards over the years.
Thank you. I appreciate the I'm even more sensitive to the boy comment, but I feel the same way. The reason that sticks out to me, and I'd like you to elaborate, because in reviewing some of your commentaries, you're very critical of the Bush administration and the Department of Forestry and the Forester. Can you help me understand a little bit how you move from criticism to collaboration? Just if you could take me down. You're now a member of the board. It's highly political. To me, this feels kind of like the Board of Higher Education excitement that we saw last year. So let's assume that we go forward and you're on that board. How do you move to the next step?
Well, I think that both sides have very strong views. This president has a very strong view about the environment and forests. He's putting a tilt towards harvest and moving away from the concept that had been practiced in the previous administration of conservation. So those are strong views. I think before you can get to common ground, both sides need to be honest about their strong views. I hope we don't want airheads, people with no ideas, representing the state or the board or anyone else who have no views whatsoever. So you have, I think, in the search for common ground, as I witnessed it in the conflict resolution workshop that the center at SOU conducted, strong views, but working through what's behind the fears that people have, working behind those, I think you can reach common ground. I've seen it happen.
Let's switch gears just a moment. We had another very controversial appointment last month who was a journalist. And everyone was assured that that person was no longer a journalist because the fear was, even on a board that I didn't think was all that political anyway, made that big of a difference.
Marine board?
That was a Marine board. But there was some fear that the person that was put on the Marine board would use their platform on the Marine board for journalism so that they could use it as a platform. Did the executive branch talk to you when they recruited you for this job about your journalism? And then and follow-up to that is, do you think your appointment on this board will limit your writing?
Well, if your question is, will I stop writing, my answer to you, well, my answer would be, I don't think membership on the board merits removal of my First Amendment rights or my livelihood. I am a writer, Senator. However, you're raising a very important question, and that is it appropriate for someone who is a writer to practice journalism and reportage on the deliberations, the specific deliberations within that board? I think that's wholly inappropriate, and I would not do so. Now, my work today is different. I don't write a column. I don't write public radio commentaries. I gave those up some months ago, not in anticipation of this nomination. In fact, I cleared the board so I could begin working earnestly on the two books that I mentioned. One of them is a political thriller, by the way, and we may.
That be a fiction of work of fiction.
All I'll say, Madam Chairman, is I might be able to find a chapter out of this exercise. So that's the nature. That's the nature of my work. And if you're asking, am I the inside reporter who's going to be reporting what's the deliberation?
I'm not going to do that. I'm not trying to be trivial by any means, but I know it was an issue last time for the executive, and I'm just asking if it wasn't an issue when they recruited you.
No, it was not. I told them what I had done. The governor called me after I had cleared the decks to begin working on my books, and called me one day and said, Les, I need you to do me a favor. And then he proceeded to tell me what it was. And I said, and then he promised me that this would be, an easy process that I would really enjoy. I'm going to tell Ted that the next time he has a favor he wants to offer me, I may think twice about it. I'm being facetious. He knew I was a journalist. I told him at the time that I had given up the regular columns, the weekly column, the twice a week commentary. My writing now is longer term. It's in-depth magazine articles. It's books. And I'm not going to write a book on the Board of Forestry. I don't think it would really sell.
I agree. One last question.
Correct.
As fascinating as all this is, I don't think it'll be a top 10 at Barnes & Noble.
Yeah.
Let me ask you one other thing, again, switching gears to a topic that has not been touched yet. This is going to be a big fire season. Yes, it is. We've got no snowpack in the Siskiyous, very little in the... Well, we have more in the Siskiyous than the Cascades, but that's not saying anything. Politically, at home, the big issues have been tanker bases and their close relation to the Marble Mountains just over the border, not having another biscuit fire. Can you tell us what your philosophy is on initial attack? How fast we go after, who goes after, whose role is it to get on fires as soon as possible? What's your philosophy?
Well, let me put it this way: the priority in a case like this, and I quite agree with you, we're in for hell this summer when it comes to fires. And I think the last bad one we had with the biscuit involved could look like a Sunday school picnic if this weather trend continues. I think the first place you focus the attack is on the urban-rural interface. These are where families live. These are where homes are. This is where most families have most of their net worth. And then you go elsewhere. One of the faults I have that I'd be very eager to discuss with the National Forest Service is in the name of thinning, going out into the deep out back, away from the urban-rural interface, and trying to put the focus there, because I don't think you can fireproof the forest out there. You can mitigate the damage, but you can't fireproof them. And much of those forests, and certainly in our part of the state, Senator, as you well know, are forest-adapted ecosystems, and there's no way you're going to stop nature from having those fires occur. They can be dealt with. The Forest Service is, if anything, a firefighting agency. But if you're talking about how you mount the attack, I oppose to the tanker-based loss in our region, but I think the first priority is human beings, and that's the urban-rural interface.
Madam Chair, just one quick clarification. So one of the problems we had in the Biscuit Fire was the forest, U.S. Forest Service had forest structure life, and our guys in the state had life structure forest. So
I'm sorry, as a
firefighting priority. So just to clarify, you are life structure forest. That is the priority for you.
What's the other choice against? I'm sorry.
The exact opposite. Forest structure, then life.
I think you start with life,
then structure.
I'm pro-life.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, non-gender chairperson Brown.
Thank you, Sarah Atkinson. I think the appropriate language is chair, but however you wish to elaborate, that's up to you. Senator Bridger, do you wish to ask some questions?
Thank you, Madam Chair, for allowing me to ask a question. I appreciate it. Mr. O'Coin, as you know, I'm not a member of the Rules Committee. I'd like to explain to you my reason for being here today. I have read every email. I have had a report of every phone message on your appointment. I have also called you personally.
Yes,
and
ma'am.
I am here today to do due diligence because I have very extremes coming at me from my district.
I'm quite sure you do.
I was opposed to ballot measure 34. I have concerns when I hear you talk about wolves. So I think that while I try to really respect differences, as much as I believe anybody in this building, I am a very strong moderate. I respect differences, and I respect those differences that you and I have in those two issues that I mentioned. What I would like to ask you today is, how do you plan to bring moderate views in policymaking to the Forest Board? Because that is a keen interest of mine, because I believe that Argonians have moderate views and we do not see them overall as extremists.
Senator, are you suggesting that my views, I am an extremist?
I am not suggesting that. My question to you, and it's an important one for me, as to how you plan to help bring more moderate views as a member of the Forest Board. Not that their views have not been moderate, but if they're moderate now, will you continue with that? If they're not moderate now, will you help them to be more moderate, since I believe that most Argonians are in that position?
I agree that most Argonians are moderate in their fundamental values. If you look at my record in the Congress, which is the only previous experience in governance that I can give you, Senator, you will find that I have been a problem solver rather than someone who knocks barns over. I'll give you an example. 1989, Senator Packwood introduced a bill, and I'll try to keep this brief, but it illustrates being able to step inside the shoes of somebody who has a different background, a different approach on the world than you do. Senator Packwood sprang a bill on the Washington and Oregon delegations dealing with the log export substitution. Now, substitution means that a private landowner who's perfectly able under the law to export a log to Japan or some other foreign country can then, after having done so, buy a federal log and replace and substitute for that log that had been exported abroad. This is highly controversial in the state of Oregon, and Senator Hatfield, to his credit, offered a bill that tightened substitution regulations, but he applied it to both states, Washington and Oregon. I didn't want to see that in the interest of Oregon small mill operators, many of whom are dependent upon public timber. You see, if a substitutor can do that, then he can send the log overseas and then compete in what's already a dogfight of a competition for domestic logs. I wanted to see that tightening, but I knew that in Washington State there is an entire political culture that disagrees with that. And if that bill would have been pushed to its conclusion, it would have surely died because the Speaker of the House at the time, Tom Foley, who controls the agenda of the House, was from Washington State, and so the Oregon and Washington delegations sat down to try to figure out how to do this. Senator Hatfield was determined to put it on both states. I came up with by stepping inside the shoes of my colleagues north of us, came up with a geographical compromise, and it simply allowed the state of Washington to continue its historical practices on substitution, and allowed the state and allowed the provisions of the Packwood proposal to apply to Oregon, where we had a real need. Now, that's problem solving. That's stepping inside somebody else's shoes, trying to understand what they think. I want to come back to the point of strong views. I had a very strong view that substitution ought to be strengthened, a very passionate view. But in when you're dealing with governance, which is what my job was and will be in the Board of Forestry, you can't just arm wrestle and force your will on someone else. You have to try to find what's bothering the other person, try to understand what where they're coming from, and then fashion policies that will get the best job done possible.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Thank you. We have, if I can put you on hold, Mr. Cohen, we have at least one senator who wishes to testify. If you would just mind hanging out there. Senator Byer, do you want to come forward? Okay. Thank you, Senator Byer, and welcome. Look forward
to Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, guys, would have been happy to wait. I was purposely wanted to wait till after Mr. Cohen is done. But seeing you brought me up here, I will testify now. I'm Roger Byer, State Senator, District 9, and I'm here to testify actually in opposition to Mr. Cohen. And the reason I was hoping to wait till he's done, because I was have been watching on TV and now in the room trying to get the answers to the questions or listen to the answers to the questions that you have presented to him. I appreciate the discussion that has happened for the last now hour and a half, but with the exception of one or two questions, I think the focus of this hearing and of this appointment has been somewhat misguided. And I come to that, and many of you probably know, and I maybe should declare a conflict of interest as a small woodland owner in the state of Oregon with forest lands on both eastern and western Oregon. And whereas the Board of Forestry does
set policy on the state for us and works with the federal government and deals with things like grazing on forest and ballot measure 34 and what's in the policy of the city to the counties and the ONC counties and the Tillamook and the Clatsop counties and the forests. What the Board of Forestry, by my perspective, does, and their main job, is they regulate private forest land. And that is what I think the focus of this hearing should be, and what Mr. Acoin, where he may have a past of being both supported and opposed by timber industries and environmental industries or, you know, positions many different times, he does not have the perspective of a private forest land owner. Since this board was reformulated, I believe it was the 1987 session, but it may have been 89, it was Governor Goldschmidt. Prior to that, the Board of Forestry was dominated by industries people. Prior to that time, I believe it was 87, but it may have been 89. It was somewhere in that vicinity. Since then, the Board of Forestry has a statutory mandate of a minimum or a minority membership of people who have substantial interest in the forest industry. And I would disagree with Senator Ringo that there are five people representing forest industry right now. On the board are Jennifer Philippi from Rough and Ready Timber Company, clearly represents the forest industry and gets a substantial amount of revenue from that industry. There is Larry Gustina from the Gustina Land and Timber Company, also clearly a representative of the forest industry. You have someone from, I would say, the conservation side, from Diane Snyder. You then have Chris Heffernan, and some people would claim that he is representative of the forest industry. I would argue he is not. I printed off the webpage of Chris Heffernan, and I would argue that he is the small woodland person, which is the person that we, the small woodland owners, have always traditionally had a voice on this board. But
Senator Beyer, for, I haven't gotten to that part of the statute, but are small woodland orders subject to any regulations under ORS 527.610-770 or 527.990 and 992?
I don't know those statutes by reference, Madam Chair. You would have to identify what they are more closely.
Okay.
But small woodland owners are, the Board of Forestry sets the rules that cover all private forest land in the state of Oregon, along with state forest policy. Chris Heffernan, and for those of you who have not gone to his website, I will just read off some of the things, some of the conservation awards he and his farm has, or his ranch, have won. The 2002 Rural Sportsman Big Game Management Farm of the Year, as well as the Wildlife Stewardship Farm of the Year Award. He served as an Eastern Oregon representative for the Committee for Family Forest Lands. He's a committee member of the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation and a committee chairman of the Northeast Oregon Regional Fire Protection Award. So those are the most current conservation awards that he has won. So I would argue that Chris Heffernan, where his farm or his ranch is clearly a small woodland perspective, and I appreciate that very much. I would not say that he is generate a substantial, I believe is the word in the statute, revenue from the forest industry. You then have three members who I don't believe fall into either camp. You have Barbara Craigs of Still Reeves, William Hutchinson, was an attorney in private practice, and Steve Hobbs, an assistant dean at OSU. These three people, I don't believe, would belong in either conservation camp or the industry camp. So you have a board that statutory says that no more than three people can receive a substantial amount of income from the forest industry. Currently, we have two. Chris Heffernan, you could say, is in that side because he is a small woodland person. But clearly, it is not more than the three there. The appointment of Mr. Coyne will now move the balance of this board and remove the small woodland owner perspective, a perspective that has always been on the board in my lifetime, and a perspective that is vastly needed because we small woodland owners own about a third of the private forest land in the state of Oregon, and this board regulates the conduct on their lands. I'm glad that Senator Ferraioli asked the question about what is meant by massive clear cuts, and we got somewhat of a definition on that, albeit a very, I guess, inaccurate definition, because when I heard that word, as Senator Ferry and Mr. Coyne pointed out, we do have clear cuts in Oregon limited now to 120 acres. That is on private land and state land, and the federal government has voluntarily, as Senator Ferry pointed out, to follow or exceed our Forest Practices Act. Madam Chair, I think this, if this appointment was to replace anyone else on this board besides Mr. Heffernan, I probably wouldn't be here testifying in opposition. Maybe if it was one of the two industry representatives, I probably still would be, because I believe we need industry representatives. But if it was either of the other four positions, I would have no objection to this appointment. But this appointment will remove a voice that is vastly needed by the thousands of small farm forest operators in this state, of which I am one of. And I think it will greatly shift the focus of the board. And my concern is, as this hearing has been almost predominantly on the public timberlands in the state of Oregon, my fear, I'm just making sure that the people realize this board regulates private forest lands in the state of Oregon, and a voice is going to be missed with this appointment. Thank you, Madam Chair. I would be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Senator Byers. Senator Farrelly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator, approximately how many small non-industrial woodland owners are there in Oregon?
Madam Chair, Senator Farrelly, I don't have that number. There are probably people in the room that do, but there are tens of thousands. I know that the Oregon Small Woodlands Association, which is the association, the group, there are approximately 2,500 members. I believe they probably represent about 10% of the private small land, forest landowners in the state of Oregon. So there are tens of thousands.
Madam Chair, there are 38,000 approximately small woodland owners. There's 158,000 Oregonians that own 1 to 9 acres field lands that would fall under the regulations. So there's, the senator's right, there's tens of thousands of small woodland owners that need representation on this board.
Madam Chair, I'd also like to point out, and just to, as an example, Wayne Krieger is a former small woodland owner who is now Representative Krieger, who is on the Board of Forestry. But the perspective that needs to be brought forward, and many of you may appreciate this, and again, this dates me somewhat to my history with this board and how long I've been doing this, but it was in the early 90s on an issue in front of the board, and the issue was productive. What is productive timberland? What is unproductive timberland? And the small woodland owner representative of the board made the point to the board that why is it that when federal government or state government takes and sets aside some of their acreage for wildlife and conservation, that is considered a good thing. But when a small woodland owner does that, it moves their forest into an unproductive category. And it was because of that discussion and that perspective brought forward by the small woodland owner representative on the Board of Forestry that we got that change, that that's no longer considered unproductive forest land. People have different values for their forest land. Not every small woodland owner has their forest land as a profit center. Many of them own their forest land because they want it for conservation reasons. That is a perspective that needs to be brought forward to this board, and that is the perspective that will be lost with the loss of Chris Heffernan.
Thank you, Senator Byer. Any further questions? Thank you. Mm-hmm. Senator Deckert?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ryan Deckert, Senate District 14, Beaver and Aloha, Southwest Portland. I want to be here just for really one purpose, and that is the gentleman to my right, Lessa Coyne, and please don't hold this against him. I'm not going to pick up any votes for you by telling folks that he gave me my first political job or job as a sophomore in college. It was unpaid, but certainly having grown up in Washington County, and he was my representative, our congressman through. If I can say I've known someone a long, long time, Lessa Coyne fits that bill of someone that I've known for well over a decade. And one of the most, at least on the Board of Forestry issues and the issues that are germane to this committee today, the deepest recollections I have from the campaigns that he waged and the advertisements was the deep support that he had within the natural resources community. The last time Lesa Coyne cast votes as a member of the U.S. Congress, I remember the deep support that he enjoyed, and it was came through most during when you're up campaigning, is the deep support that he enjoyed from the natural resource community and the timber industry in particular. And so I'm here as a friend and as a state senator to urge confirmation of Lesa Coyne and to attest to the public service that he has committed to this state for decades and decades, and though he's not going to be compensated for this job, it is one that these volunteer positions, I think, are so critical, and I just wanted to express my support.
Thank you, Senator Deckert. Any questions for Senator Deckert?
Thanks, I have lots about how he was trained, but I guess I can wait.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Atkinson. Senator Shields, fire away.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Congressman, the work of the Board of Forestry is certainly complex. It doesn't have easy answers. I'm particularly concerned a little bit about the tone of this hearing this morning. And after listening for the last hour and a half or hour and three quarters, I believe more than ever that the Board needs people who really are open-minded and who can step into the shoes of other people and understand their problems. I know you've made reference to this in answer to Senator Verger's question. But that kind of person really does have to work without grinding an axe, even in the presence of their enemies. It sounds too much like scripture, but I'll say that. How can you assure this committee that given everything you've heard, working in this environment, you're going to be that kind of person?
Thank you, Senator. I think that that once this confirmation is agreed to, and I serve on the board, and hopefully a future appointment will put once again a small woodlot owner on the board in place of one of the other industry representatives. I believe that when the smoke clears and passions ebb, that you will see a very productive group of people. Now, you ask me about the complexities that one has to deal with in the board. I'm very familiar with that. I appreciate it. I don't know all the details. Couldn't be here to presume to state all the details. But I do know forestry. I know private forestry. I know government forestry. And I know regulation. And there is nothing simple about this job. There is nothing simple because the state of Oregon is divided. I think that if the governor succeeds in getting a board that is viewed by the public as having as representing the face of Oregon, rather than being dominated with a working majority from the industry today, I think it will be in a position to give him what he seeks, which is a voice that Oregonians can respect, even though they may not agree with it, when they advise the governor about both state issues and the growing responsibility he's given to the board to advise him on federal issues. Now, you talk about complexities and difficult problems. I don't know anything in forestry. Very few things in forestry are simple and cut and dried. Let me just give you an example of how I've this is one of many examples I can think of over 24 years of how I've tried to exercise governance rather than axe grinding. The Weyerhaeuser Company came to me towards the end of my congressional career with a very real problem. They owned a large forest stand
in an island in the middle of the National Wildlife Refuge in southwest Oregon. That forest is what you call a climax forest. 2,000-year-old cedar trees, an ecological gem, but also a huge financial asset for that company. A company that recognized that if it would launch a firestorm of criticism if it were to log it. And so what it in effect had was a frozen asset of multiple millions of dollars. I went, using my seat on the appropriations committee, my solution was to get an appraisal of the land, and then, having gotten that, appropriating $6.7 million to buy out Weyerhaeuser willingly, and to add that island to the wildlife refuge. A win for the company, certainly a win for the general public, which enjoys the wildlife, the wildlife refuge.
Gee, Madam Chair, I can't resist saying that almost sounds like Forest Legacy. Excuse me.
Thank you, Senator Shields.
Continue. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I was finished. Congressman. It certainly was a win-win, and you seem to have been able to do that without compromising your environmental views. That's great. Follow-up question, Madam Chair.
Senator Shields.
When you're setting policy, and as you did in Congress, it can be almost impossible to bring the timber industry and its opponents together. You've given us some examples of where you worked with a particular company like Weyerhaeuser, but can you give us some examples of how you actually brought opponents together?
Yeah, I can, and there were a number of them during the 18 years I was in the Congress. But, you know, Senator, one of the episodes that I remember best was in the 80s when the timber industry went virtually nuts over a bill I introduced to restore a reservation to the Grand Ronde tribe in Lincoln County. A tribe, I will say, that was one of the poorest in the state. I wanted to create, and Senator Hatfield agreed with me on this, he co-sponsored the bill, I wanted to give that tribe a reservation based of forest land so they would have the economic tools to get out of poverty rather than simply subsisting on government programs. The reservation took something, I can't remember the figure, but something like 35,000 acres of ONC lands to create. Now, there was a problem with this. ONC lands, no log from ONC lands can be exported abroad. But in the hands of a sovereign tribe, that log can be. And on the strength of this, the industry was prepared to kill this legislation despite the poverty of the tribe. I defused the opposition and the objections by persuading the tribes to agree to a provision to sell timber only to domestic competition, domestic manufacturers. And after I did that, the tribe on its own volunteered not to build a mill on their lands to log their own stumpage for 20 years. I might add that by default, the beneficiary of this was a timber industry executive by the name of John Hampton, who had a mill located only a few miles away from the tribal forest lands and had a substantial competitive advantage over all of his competitors to access that land, that stumpage, which I believe had to be worth millions of dollars. I think you can find ways to bring divergent interests together. You know, in a hearing that was held on this issue, I can remember in Willamina, the gymnasium was packed with people. They were hanging from the rafters. thinking that you can imagine what all the controversy was. There was a racial tinge. There were people who were worried about log exports, all the rest, a lot of suspicion. What I did was to bring the timber panel and the tribal panel at tables before me. And as each side made made a statement of objection, I went to the other side and I said, is that what you really intend to do? And back and forth, and I began to see the winnowing of differences. I also had representatives from every state agency, every agency, both in the state and federal, sitting alongside the wall, so that if a technical question came up, we would get a informative answer. I'm very proud of that hearing, because by the time it ended, that gymnasium, which was close to being a Barnum and Bailey circus at the beginning, emptied out, and there wasn't a single objection left. The bill went in, it passed, and the Grand Ronde was on its way to economic recovery and non-dependence, which I think is good. And for a mill owner like Mr. Hampton, it turned out very lucrative for him too.
Thank you. One final follow-up question, Madam Chair. I'm going to set a little bit of a context for this question. Over and over again this morning, the comment has been made about your appointment and the fact that it replaces a woodland owner, and there's been a lot of testimony about what a fine person Mr. Hefferman is and all that, and I understand that. It kind of reminds me of when 25 years ago my wife and I adopted a Native American child, and we were concerned for a little bit and said, gee, we don't know about a white couple doing that. And I was reminded by the Children's Services Division, it wasn't about the adoption at that point. That was done. If we didn't take this child from CSD, somebody else would adopt that child. I kind of think of that this morning, because this is not about the woodland owner. The governor made a decision. And whether you are the appointee or somebody else is the appointee, the discussion's not about the woodland owner. And certainly I hope that in the future context there'll be another appointment in that arena. But through that process, and this is my question, the two Oregons, we talk about the urban-rural divide, the two Oregons have never been painted more clearly than they have this morning. On the one hand, you were ignored with all the praise to your predecessor. On the other hand, I think you've been attacked and demonized and vilified. And in a sense, the governor has been, too. I think a lot more heat than light has been shed on the situation by a lot of comments. I know this is a simple question, but how in the world can you go about trying to heal this urban-rural divide from your seat? We are all trying to work at it, but how can you contribute to that healing of this rift that I see only getting worse?
Well, Senator, I think, again, going back to the difference between governance and advocacy, I understand governance. And part of governance, no matter where you are in Oregon today, must take into account the two Oregons. It became vividly clear to me when I moved from the Portland metropolitan area to southern Oregon just how deep that rift is. You might be interested to know that I grew up, spent my childhood in the 40s and 50s in a timber town. Redmond, Oregon was a timber town in those days. And that was supported by a working mother. I have a full appreciation for what a way of life means to rural Oregon. I do not think that means that we ignore environmental concerns, because if we avoid environmental concerns, then we're going to end up eating the principle out of our natural resources rather than living off of the dividends of the natural resources. But I have a deep and abiding appreciation. will make it my business, drawing on that personal background, which is very deep to me, to exercise governance, which means collaboration, not giving up views, but finding common ground between views in order to try to build that interface. Now, could I just add one thing? I know you're very crowded for time, Madam Chairman, but I have, and it ties into the Senator's question. I have seen some misrepresentation in this confirmation across the state through the press and in trade organizations that I believe deserves an answer for the consideration of this committee and for the state senate. A small woodlands owner in Senator Verger's district said that I have an agenda. It's to stop logging. The Oregonians for Food and Shelter on March 4th said, quote, "With all that Lessacoin has done to undermine our Oregon timber businesses, his appointment is a significant slap in the face to all communities that now depend or did depend on timber." Some people want to believe that. Some people honestly believe that. Other people know that not to be true, and other people are suffering from amnesia. I served on the committee, as I said before, that wrote the Forest Service and BLM budget. I'm sorry that small woodlands owners weren't affected by that jurisdiction. Frankly, I'm grateful that they weren't. You wouldn't want those regulated by the federal government. But it still deals with a commodity. I wrote the timber sales level every year in the annual appropriation for 12 years. This is not the work of somebody who is the enemy of the timber industry. It is not the work of somebody who wants to, quote unquote, stop logging. Furthermore, it's not someone who has done so much to, quote unquote, undermine our Oregon timber businesses. On top of that, I recall in the Reagan in the recession in 1982, when small mill owners throughout the Northwest, mainly public dependent on public timber, were stuck with pre-recession stumpage that they had purchased before the recession hit. That was far higher priced than the price of lumber, because housing went boom, prices for lumber went through the floor, and I worked very, very closely with Senator Hatfield to pass the Timber Contract Relief Act, which provided for the mills stuck in that position, which would have caused them to go bankrupt, to sell at a reasonable price that stumpage back to the government and get the banks off of their backs and allow them to still be standing after the recession. Without that piece of legislation, hundreds of mills throughout the Northwest would have gone bankrupt. This is not the work, Senator, of somebody who wants to destroy the timber industry. So thank you for your question, and thanks for the opportunity to elaborate on it.
Thank you, Mr. Acorn. We very much appreciate your willingness to come before this committee today. I have one more representative in the room who wishes to testify. I have been given the signal that he is going to be brief. I know that there are a number of members in the audience who wish to testify. I did not wish to cut off any of my colleagues who came to testify today. It is our courtesy as legislators to allow legislators to testify, particularly since the count so far has been 8 Republicans to 2 Democrats. I am going to let Representative Buckley testify. And then I would ask Catherine Van Atta, Rick Stone, and Link Philippi to get ready to come forward to be the first panel. Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members of the committee. I will be very brief. Congressman Cohen is a constituent of my district. I'm very proud to be here in support of his appointment. He's a man of integrity. He's a man whose devotion to our state I will match with any Oregonians. And that's my statement, brief and as strong as I could possibly make it. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Buckley. Mr. Klein, we'll let you sit in the back now.
Very much, Madam Chairman.
Ms. Van Anna, Mr. Stone, and Mr. Philippi.
It's not Catholic, okay. She didn't sign in, I did. Says Casey.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I just assumed it was Catherine. So.
Assume that.
That's a good thing I didn't call you Ms. Van Natta. That would have made it really bad.
Well, I've been called a lot worse than that.
Okay.
That's one of the reasons I use the initials, because my real name is Kay, and I get a lot of Ms. Mail.
Okay.
People
I'm sorry. I can relate to your pain.
Well, it doesn't cause me any problem.
Just so you know, the reason the three of you were picked out first is that you're the only three that checked the box that you live more than 100 miles from the Capitol, and so you get first dibs on testifying. So take it away.
Thank you. I'm a small landowner, have been, made my living off of a tree farm since 1966. Chris Hefner is a personal friend of mine and acquaintance. I have been on his tree farm, and Senator Byers, I can't add much to what he said, but I have some other things here. I do not support the confirmation of Lester Coyne to the Board of Forestry because he would be replacing a non-industrial private forest landowner that has done a good job. We as small tree farmers have had him a member on the Board of Forestry for many years. I do not think it is too much to ask for this to continue in the future. We as small tree farmers helped to save Oregon's sawmill economy by increasing our harvest when the Forest Service was shut down. The Board of Forestry has rulemaking authority. I believe that all rulemaking bodies should have members that are directly affected by these rules to explain to other members the problems and costs involved. And on occasion, there's an attempt to do something to help us. It is a good idea to have somebody present to explain why it will or will not work as planned. I also believe that all governing boards should have members that employ people and sign payroll checks on the front side. There's just nothing like that to get your sober face when you have time to make payroll. And there are a lot of people in rural Oregon. There are not a lot of people in rural Oregon, but we enable big cities to exist. Please don't forget us. Thank you, and I will be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Next.
Madam Chair and members of the Rules Committee, my name is Link Philippi, and I need to make two disclosures right up front. I'm in the timber industry, and my wife Jennifer is on the Oregon Board of Forestry. For that latter reason, I had originally thought it wouldn't be appropriate for me to make a comment today. But I ran across a couple of articles in the current Atlantic Monthly that made me think I would speak after all. The articles deal with an issue that may be as important as the forest debate itself. They're about the nature of public discourse in general and about the conservative and liberal versions of talk radio in particular. The subject of radio commentary hit home with me in the light of the recent appointment to the Board of Forestry of former Congressman Lester Coyne. A Coyne is remembered by many from his days in politics as one who was moderate and worked quite well on all sides of forestry issues. But in his role as radio commentator in Southern Oregon the last several years, a strikingly different Lester Coyne has emerged. I have listened to his commentaries on Jefferson Public Radio during my drive to and from work, and I have regularly felt both upset and demeaned by the tone and language our Coyne uses to describe those of us trying to do a responsible job in our work within the forest industry. As I thought about my reactions to these radio commentaries by a Coyne, I realized that what disturbed me most was his unwillingness to consider views that differ from his own. And it struck me that this attitude reflects the larger societal problem presented in the Atlantic Monthly articles I mentioned earlier. The articles about talk radio in the Atlantic include a startling comment from host John Ziegler that compares our culture to the Arab world in this fashion. We should remember, he says flatly, that when we compare these two cultures, we're better than they are. We're not perfect, but we're better as a people, as a culture, and as a society than they are. Most of us who try for balance in our thinking would wince at the thought of that comment going out over the airwaves, and to be sure, a Coyne never says anything as shocking as we environmentalists are better than they, the timber industry people.
but some of his language comes perilously close to communicating a similar message. Timber people, he says, are, quote, knowingly trying to dupe an unsuspecting public in an effort to make money. They are, quote, determined to squeeze all that is wild out of your national forests. They are, quote, irresponsible moneyed interests to whom legislators toady up and who are the source of, quote, human stupidity that caused the fuel buildup leading to catastrophic fires. It's hard not to read these remarks as saying, in effect, that the environmentalists are clearly better than those with a viewpoint different from theirs. These habits of thought and language are worrisome in a potential appointee to the State Board of Forestry. In such a policy-making body, consideration of diverse views and the ability to bring people and ideas together are essential. Oregon needs science-based and cooperative solutions, not more controversy in managing our forests. A coin's contentious style may be effective in a fiery one-person radio show, but it's hard to imagine someone who uses polarizing and inflammatory language being very successful in the collaborative and group-oriented processes necessary to the Board of Forestry. Russ Acoin has a great deal of experience as a political figure, and his personality would most certainly elevate the board to a higher profile. Yet, I believe the profile would be a negative one, and his appointment to a policy-making board would not be in the best interest for Oregon or Oregon's forests. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Sohn, and I assume you're related to Howard.
Yes, I'm Howard's brother.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Senator Brown, Madam Chair. My name is Rick Sohn. I'm the president of Lone Rock Timber Company. I have a PhD in forest biology. I'm also the chair of Oregon Forest Industry Council. I'm going to just address a few comments that a lot of what I wanted to say was covered, but I'll hit on the special points. I think what we heard a lot today from Russ Acoin, I was very concerned about because I sensed a very political approach. He said it was an informational approach, but every statement I heard that I registered was a political approach. Now, I represent a family company, and I work in an industry that has a very strong stewardship ethic and a commitment to sustainability of the forest environment for our children. We're not moving. Our lands are where they are. Our family is where it is. The Board of Forestry, I believe, has responded very well in the past to good information and modified forest practices as needed to be consistent with the sustainability of our forest resources. And I think this is a credit to the progressive direction for the Board of Forestry. What I've heard this morning is a lot of us-them language and what I considered to be a lot of political posturing. For example, with regard to ballot measure 34, yes, I will follow the structure-based management plan, mixing logged as well as non-logged forests. Yes, I want to guarantee revenues to the counties, a steady stream of revenue. At what level a steady stream of revenue? No, I am not against clear-cutting in most cases. I don't like massive siltation. Frankly, I've never seen massive siltation off a clear-cut that we have done on our lands. No, I'm not against salvage logging. I'm against excesses of salvage logging. What are excesses of salvage logging? These, I would submit to you, Madam Chair, are all political statements. Okay? So those are a very great concern to me. I was very interested and appreciative of the comments of Roger Beyer that I thought summarized a lot of the concerns very well. Quite frankly, this job is not a job in the Department of Health and Human Services. This is a job about the Forestry Department. Understanding forestry does not only mean listening to every human voice. Not every human voice understands forests and forestry. Not nearly as much as it means understanding information about the forests and about how forests function and are sustained. Quite frankly, trees and plants do not talk, but they do follow predictable patterns of growth, adaptation, and reproduction. These patterns are best determined through scientific research. With all due respect to the congressional record of Lesser Coyne in the 70s and 80s, I believe his appointment to the Board of Forestry is at best risky. He made very political statements hiding the issues. And let me refer to just one more example, if I can find it. And frankly, anyone who gets on the Board of Forestry, I hope, goes through a dramatic learning curve. There was the discussion of Senator Atkinson on initial attack. Quite frankly, initial attack keeps fires away from structures. We're talking about forest fires and keeping them away from structures. When we talk about life, structure, and forest as a priority, where Lesser Coyne said, of course I'm pro-life. That is another political statement. Of course they are. Frankly, we have the rural fire departments who take the responsibility to defend structures and protect human life in forest fires. It is the job of the Forest Protective Association, such as Douglas Forest Protective Association, with which I am most familiar, to keep most forest fires under an acre in size by going after the forest fire wherever it is in the forest and being effective at keeping the fires from spreading. And then attacking structure, causing risk to both human life and to
Mr.
and
Stone,
structure.
I would ask that you wrap it up at
this
point. Okay,
I will. Thank you. What I'm saying is that because of the riskiness of this appointment, I very much prefer the reappointment of Chris Heffernan, a distinguished land manager, but I do want to also recognize that I appreciated the remark of Senator Frank Shields that to the effect that a family forest landowner should be on the board. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Schell, Mr. Filippi.
Thank you.
And Mr. Van Natta, we appreciate you being here this morning.
Thank you.
Sarah Atkinson.
If I could just, with your indulgence, apologize. I have a few constituents who have traveled a long way to be here, but I have got some other constituents that traveled to be here on floor session, and I'm going to have to excuse myself.
Senator Atkinson is going to be excused. All of the members who are here in committee are going to be excused from floor session.
I'll be back.
So you've got the hook. Again, we would ask witnesses to limit their testimony to 2 minutes, and please again comment on the appointee in front of us. With that, I recall Mr. Jeff Merrick, Jessica Hamilton, Ms. Jessica Hamilton, Mr. Dave Moskowitz.
Thank you, Senator Brown. My name is Jeff Merrick. I'm an adjunct professor of law at Lewis and Clark Law School. Senator Nelson, I think, set the proper tone today by talking about the respect and integrity of the legislative process. The legislative process bears fruit in law. And there's a law that controls your activities, or I should say the governor's appointments. That law is ORS 526.0094, which limits to only three, not a minimum, but a maximum of three, members on the Board of Forestry who may derive significant portion of their income from persons or organizations subject to regulation. Right now, you've got a problem, or the state has a problem. Right now, you have more than three on the board who derive their income or are in a regulated entity, which means fellows like Jay Ward of ONRC have a loaded gun to the head of this state that can challenge the Board of Forestry actions anytime they feel like it. And so the governor is trying to move in the direction of cleaning up this mess. If you reject this appointment, this fine gentleman who has got incredible credentials, you're not necessarily going to get Chris Heffernan. In fact, you cannot. The law prohibits it. So you're probably going to get someone of lesser quality than Lesser Coyne. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Merrick. Ms. Hamilton, Mr. Moskowitz, and then I would ask Representative Boone to come forward as well.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is Jessica Hamilton. I'm the Legislative Affairs Director for the Oregon League of Conservation Voters. And we have 3,000 members, about 3,000 members in Oregon, who strive to protect environmental heritage in the state by working with the Oregon Legislature. And so we are very supportive of the appointment of Lesar Coyne and to restore the balance to the Board of Forestry. And frankly, we wish it would have happened a long time ago. So that's basically what we wanted to is to state our support for him. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Moskowitz.
Chair Brown, members of the committee, my name is David Moskowitz with the Wild Salmon Center, and are pleased to be here today to support Governor Kulongoski's nomination of Lesar Coyne to the Board of Forestry. This nomination is incredibly important to Oregon. You can turn around, look at the room and see who's here to know that. This appointment is about two things. It's about the current structure of the board. As Mr. Merrick just pointed out, there's a problem with conflict of interest. And the statute, not only does it allow up to three members of the board to have derive significant income, but the second clause after that says that no member of the board shall have any relationship or pecuniary interest that would interfere with a member representing the public interest. It's a piece of the statute that is regularly overlooked after the limitation of three. All seven members of the current board have some level of interest directly with the timber industry. Five of the seven have significant economic ties. This is the first step in trying to solve that problem. There actually is a Senate bill, Senate Bill 530, that attempts to restructure the Board of Forestry, and hopefully that bill will receive some hearing this session because it can address some of the issues. The Wild Salmon Center would support a member of family, forest land, or small woodlot owners as having a particular seat on the board, and they have not had that directly with the current statute. The other thing this is about, it's about what the Board of Forestry must accomplish. Right now, the Forest Practices Act violates the Clean Water Act. There's a tremendous problem with forest land conservation to rural development that the board must address, that the state must address. Issues of sustainability, both of forest products and other products that come from forest lands. There's marketing of particular Oregon products. And there's also having forestry try to meet the challenge of the Oregon plan for salmon and watersheds. This is what the Board of Forestry needs to address. The state needs a broad board with representation from many sectors of the state to try to address these problems. Lesar Coyne brings solutions to those problems. Less is more. More experience to solve problems, more understanding about the county issues. I'm hoping to hear from the counties today, but in his career with the Congress, he helped Oregon counties as much as any congressperson from this state in history. He has a greater understanding of federal forest land issues, and he also understands that values from forest come more to the state than just stumps. I'd like to point out that his former staff members have worked throughout Oregon and are continuing a commitment of service to Oregon in many capacities. He's also raised two great kids with his wife Sue, who's here today. And although he claims to be writing two books, I also know that he lives within striking distance of some of Oregon's finest steelhead rivers, and I know that he owns more than one fishing rod. I think this appointment, the Board of Forestry cannot be populated from all people in the timber industry. It cannot be populated with all people with science background. Indeed, the one scientist from OSU is actually one of the people who has checked the conflict of interest box, chair of the board, Steve Hobbs, because the nature of his particular research is so tied to the timber industry and that funding. Yes, we need science, and we need to be able to talk politically about things like clear cuts. And Senator Ferrioli, they're actually, the new word is regeneration harvest, just so you know. And hopefully in Oregon, we'll get happy trees instead of California happy cows that come from those cattle lots that you referred to. Again, I just want to say, Wild Salmon Center hardly supports Mr. Coyne's appointment, and we urge the committee to act today. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Farrielly.
Madam Chair, according to that logic, then no person who works for the Oregon State University or any of the other land-holding or land-owning institutions of higher education in the state would be allowed to serve. And I guess that question, Madam Chair, is directed to Mr. Merrick, but I'd like him to comment on that and this other question. No person employed by Oregon State University, University of Oregon, or any land-owning institution of higher learning under your logic would be allowed to serve on this board or commission. Is that incorrect or is that correct?
I haven't considered every employee of the different universities. I've looked at Mr. Hobbs, who does have a, not only are they employed by, using the statute, derive their income directly from an organization that's subject to regulation. That's his business. I think that would distinguish him from every other employee.
Madam Chair, if I could
go
into this just a little bit. Stephen Hobbs is an employee of Oregon State University, which owns regulated forest land. How many institutions of higher learning in the state of Oregon own regulated forest lands?
I wouldn't know that, sir.
But it would be your contention, Madam Chair, that none of the folks that work for any of those institutions would be eligible to serve on the Board of Forests.
I'm not making that contention. I haven't studied that issue.
Well, it seems to me that then you're suggesting that Professor Hobbs is different than all those other employees.
Yes, Sarah Farrelly, he is different because he checked the conflict of interest box saying that he has a direct conflict because of the work that he does and the research that he does is in some respects funded by the timber industry in the same reasoning that Barbara Craig, who's employed with Stoll Reeves, according to her ethics disclosure, her firm represents clients in the forest products industry who have a legislative and administrative interest in the Oregon Board of Forestry. I think that's Mr. Merrick's contention. Do you have any further questions?
I do, Madam Chair.
Please proceed.
So it's your contention that no attorney representing any client who has an interest in forest land ownership would be eligible to serve on the Board of Forestry in the same way that Barbara Craig is being suggested that she has a conflict of interest issue?
You know, you're making these broad statements, and usually broad statements can never be answered yes or no. I've looked at the people here. I've looked at the backgrounds. I've looked at the public records. And based, I'm just talking about these seven people. I'm not trying to make broad statements about everybody in the universe. I think that currently your board is illegal. As someone who wanted to hold environmental groups in check, I urge them not to file lawsuits to date. You've given, if you block these, you're giving a loaded gun to environmentalists to stop any board action. I think it would behoove you to get someone of the quality of Les O'Coin on the board, because it's not Les O'Coin or Chris Heffernan. It's Les O'Coin or someone else. It's not going to be Chris Heffernan, because that certainly would be blocked by a lawsuit.
Madam Chairman, I appreciate the reference to a loaded gun. However, I think a 37-cent stamp is probably the most effective weapon that I've seen the environmental community use. File your suit.
Thank you, Senator Farrelly. Any further questions for the panel? Thank you very much. I'd ask Representative Debbie Boone to come forward. They don't have to now. Thank you.
For the record, I'm Deborah Boone, State Representative, House District 32, which is representing the upper left coast of the state, including a lot of timberland, and also including about 100 acres of my own small woodland lot that we own. My son has a degree in forestry engineering. We are small woodland owners and belong to the association. And I'm an avid fisher person, although I haven't fished at all this year, sad to say, because of my work here and on the weekends. All that said, Les O'Coin was my congressman for, I think, 18 years and did a fabulous job for the state of Oregon and our country. And I strongly endorse his appointment to this board, to the forestry board, because I think he will bring fairness and balance, and I think that he will do a good job. I trust him, I trust his judgment, and I trust his experience. And one other thing I wanted to let you know, I hear a lot of talk about fire interest. I also am a volunteer fire department on a small fire department that's all forest land in Clatsop County. And I trust that former Congressman O'Coin will do the right thing for the state, and I encourage you to support him.
Thank you. Senator Farrielli.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Boone, would you be eligible to serve on the Board of Forestry?
Would I be?
Yes, ma'am.
As I don't know if I would be as a state legislator. I don't know that I would.
Would you like a job?
Would I like to do it? You know, I don't think so, but thank you for the offer.
Thank you, Senator Farrielli. Thank you, Representative Boone. We appreciate you being here. I understand that former Congressman Bob Duncan is in the room. We would ask that he come forward.
I made a mistake in sitting in the back of the room. It takes me a long time to get up here. And I notice that everybody now is mumbling a lot. Can you speak up a little bit? Quit mumbling so people can't hear you.
We will try to speak more clearly. Thank you and welcome.
Thank you. Actually, it's been clear enough that there are some very strong feelings on this committee. And I just would like to repeat what others have said before me, but the issue here is
Could you state your name for the record first, please?
Oh, my name is Bob Duncan.
Thank you.
I have served in public office from time to time, both in this building and in Washington, D.C. I can agree with the lady who spoke just recently, saying that O'Coin was one of the best congressmen. I'd have to disagree strongly with the gentleman who preceded her, who said he was absolutely the best congressman in history. I would nominate somebody else for that position. Les asked me to come and support him, and I'm pleased to do so. I think he may be apprehensive that he has asked Mark Antony to speak at Caesar's funeral, and is not sure whether I come to praise Les O'Coin or to bury Les O'Coin. I could frankly do either one. Because we've worked together for Oregon frequently and successfully, I think. We've also had some very, very strong disagreements. Kind of reminds me a little bit of my youngest daughter came home one time. She was 5 or 6 and announced that she was going to marry Gary, who was the little boy next door. And I suggested that I thought she was going to marry her father. And she told me that little girls could not marry their daddies. And I said, well, have you talked to Gary about this? Is he willing? And she said, well, yes, I've talked to him. She said he wasn't, but I knocked him down and kicked him a couple of times, and he agreed to marry me. Now, that's kind of like dealing with Les O'Coin has been on occasions. Not always, but on occasions. And we've had some very difficult. I sometimes wish that he had gotten into this dispute resolution a few years ago that he's been bragging about being so successful now, because there were times when I thought he needed that sort of education badly. But in every instance, whether it was involving the Bull Run watershed or a transportation appropriation bill, in the last analysis we were able to compromise. And all I can say about him is that he's a person of very strong convictions, a person who is thoughtful, who studies hard, and I don't think you'd want anybody else. I've been a little disturbed at the insistence upon some of the witnesses that you have a member of this board that represents this group and a member that represents this group, and it seems to me that if that's your objective, you are going to end up perpetuating the disputes that exist among these different groups in general and the public. You're going to push that into this Board of Forestry. Probably already have, as a matter of fact. Les is not a micromanager, doesn't pretend to be, but he has been on some pretty significant macro management issues. And I think that you can be proud of the record that he has made in that respect. I am sure that each of you could think of someone that you believe to be better than Les for this. But on the other hand, you ought to think that the next guy the governor appoints might even be worse than Les is. This may be difficult for some of you to realize, but I think it's a distinct possibility. So with all that, I won't take any more of your time. I think Les has handled himself very well today. I was inspired when they played that tape of some comment that he had made, you know. I was reminded of a famous story about Abraham Lincoln, who rode the circuit as a trial lawyer. And in one city in Illinois, he had a case which he argued successfully to the court and won his case. He came back that afternoon with what lawyers call a white horse case, an almost identical case. Only in the afternoon he was arguing the opposite side. And the judge interrupted him and said, "Mr. Lincoln, weren't you on the opposite side of this question this morning? And didn't you argue for just exactly the opposite of what you were talking about today?" And Lincoln thought a minute and he said, "Well, yes, Your Honor, that's true." He said, "I might have been wrong this morning," but he said, "I'm dead right this afternoon." And I want you to think, when Les appears to have changed his mind on some issue, which incidentally isn't a bad attribute at all, I wish you would remember what Abraham Lincoln said. There was also another quote that I think is useful to you, perhaps, in considering Les's qualifications. There was a senator, I don't remember his political party now, but he was from Wyoming or Montana. As I recall it, his name was Gale McKee. He was a professor in some institution of higher learning in his school. And he came to Oregon State one time. I didn't hear him, but I read the account. And he was commenting on the difference between being a college professor and commenting on public affairs and being a senator. He said, "Nobody really remembers what Senator McGee said or what Professor McGee says about a particular issue after a couple of weeks have gone by." But he said, "When Senator McGee makes a statement and casts a vote, he's got to live with that vote for the rest of his life." One more thing is, in connection with Mr. Heffernan, I was convinced this when I heard that first plea that he should not be turned out without proper thanks for his service. I couldn't help but think that I wish that were applicable not just to gubernatorial appointments, but to the votes of the electorate. You may feel it someday. I have had it on two occasions when I thought I had been cast out without the slightest bit of appreciation for my long and dedicated service to the voters. So it's something that all of you have to look forward to. It's something I went through, and it's something Mr. Heffernan, whom I'm sure has been a great citizen. I think he had a grandson that practiced law in Medford years ago. Anyway, thank you very much. I'm sorry to take
that. That's okay. We really appreciate you being here. Senator Ferraioli.
I just would like to add my thanks to Representative Duncan for his years of service, and to tell him that I always appreciate hearing Republicans quoted in public meetings. Thank you.
Well, thank you, sir. You're from John Day.
I am.
Yeah, there was a fine lawyer over there, John Fitz.
Yes, ma'am, Chairman. Yes, and he starved until another fine lawyer moved into the community, and then they both made a living.
You're mumbling again.
He starved until another fine lawyer moved into the community, and then they both made a living.
But his daughter and son-in-law have been very good friends of mine for
you. Thank you very much. We really appreciate your service to the state. Next on the list, Mr. Joel Scoggin, Mr. Alan Thayer, and Mr. Ron Larson. Oh, you go first. Okay. Thank you. Good morning and welcome.
Morning. My name is Joel Scoggin, Madam Chair. First, I'd like to thank you and members of the Rural Committee for allowing me to speak. Forgive me if I don't follow all the protocols. This is my first time here at the Capitol. I was asked last week by my company to come here and oppose the nomination of Lesa Coyne for the Board of Forestry. I live in or have lived in Washington County since the mid-80s and representative for a long time. And it's quite interesting that I've often made comments would like to go back to the times when Les was our representative as opposed to the folks that have preceded him. Anyway, I think what this is about is that Les, during that time when he was in the House of Representatives, had one view and worked with the timber industry and did things And since then, since he's moved to Southern Oregon, he's had a different view. And that view, I think, is the more pertinent view that this body needs to look at. One of the things that has been pointed out is that you need to have somebody on this board that thinks like Oregonians do. Les Coyne supported measure 34. An overwhelming number of Oregonians voted that down because that was not a very balanced approach. I have listened and read last week because I wanted to make sure that I was well versed in his recent comments, that his views are not with mainstream Oregon. I live in Washington County, and you know, I know we have two Oregons, and you know, I have a slightly different view from the majority of the folks that live in my county because of the background where I grew up. I grew up in Senator Verger's area down in Florence, and then moved to Portland. My dad was in the Navy, and we traveled all over the place. I had a lot of family that was in the logging industry, and so I was exposed to that over a number of years. And it is a shame that what has happened over the last few years, and it's a direct result of those activities that leads our state in the situation it is. You can go to community after community and see abandoned timber mills. You rarely see log trucks running down the road, and if you do, the logs are, you know, poles, where I remember growing up seeing one log trucks. I mean, they literally had one log on the truck running down the road. I talked to my kids about that, and they can't believe it. Also, I would like to echo the comments from Mr. Philippi and Mr. Sohn, and that I just don't think that this is the wisest appointment we can do. The government can do governor can do better. Also, I'd like to reiterate one other thing. I went to the Oregon Business Plan meeting in December where the governor made a speech and got a rousing applause from the crowd of, I don't remember how many people were there, but it was in the thousands. He got a rousing applause for his support of the natural resources and timber industry, saying how he wanted to grow those industries because he realized he needs jobs in the state to fund government programs such as schools and education. This appointment, I think, fails that test. And I'm sadly disappointed that that's his choice. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Scoggin. Next.
My name is Alan Thayer, and I'm a small woodland owner, 22 years, and an industrial forester with Crown Zellebeck, was their resource manager for 27 years. And I'm going to limit my comments to just one subject, and it's the economy. Bill Clinton, when he ran for president successfully, said, "It's the economy, stupid. Oregon has come through some extreme tough times, and they're still in it. The highest unemployment, schools underfunded, jails turning people loose, that gives the notion that Oregon is open for crime. I happen to live in Washington, and it's a little different over there. But anyway, I just want people to realize that there's also three types of woodland owners. The small woodland owner, and there's the Stones and other, the large family owners who are more committed. And then there's the stock companies. And the indications that I get as a small landowner, and as having been an industrial landowner that was a stock-based company, they're not getting the return on investment that is going to promote forestry in Oregon. And that goes also for the insurance companies that are buying up timberland. They're looking for a 10% return, and right now they're not getting it. Over half of the timberland has changed hands in Oregon in the last 5 years, and the amount that's on the market is huge. So this economy or this timber economy is hurting. We're in a global economy now. Timber is a commodity product. What we're getting off our forest lands is not adequate. We've got to double the amount of wood that we can raise on our forest lands if Oregon thinks timber is important to the economy of this state and for the rest of us. I cut my last tree yesterday. So, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Thayer.
I'm Ron Larson, 6820 Southeast 39th in Portland, Oregon.
I know that address.
Pardon me?
I said I know that address.
I would hope you would, ma'am.
Yes.
I've been a small woodland owner since 1966 and a small woodland member since 1968 and currently the chair of the Government Affairs Committee. And among the many things that have been said for Chris Hefferman, that he has the background of a small woodland owner in that he knows how long it takes to grow a tree and how long it takes to get some revenue, and he's in the camp that knows that it takes a good job in town to support a small woodlands. And the insurance companies and the small woodland owners have something in common in that they are big owners of timber stands, and they need a place to sell their wood. We small woodland owners also need a place to sell our wood. The mills have to be open. They have to be ready, and there have to be enough of them that we can get competitive bids and get a fair price for our wood. And a background that knows that intermittent sales every 5 to 10 years is an important background for us and the 50,000 owners and maybe the 150,000 heirs that think they own a little bit of that small woodland have an important opinion on how things are going. So I'm for Chris Hefferman.
Thank you. Senator Ringo, did you have a question?
Well, just a comment. Mr. Scoggins, you're from Washington County. Where do you live?
I live in Sherwood, Oregon.
Okay, good. I represent Washington County, and it seems like in the discussion we're having this morning, there's a little bit of missing, because I understand all you folks spoke for the private timberland owners, the small woodlot owners, and to me, you have very legitimate concerns, and I really appreciate the testimony you laid out. Then there's the question of how we manage our state forests, which belong to the people of the state of Oregon. And that's where I look at, and I say, you know, there just hasn't been a balance there. When I was first elected in 2001, I asked our chief forester to tell us how much do we spend on recreation in our state forest. And you know what he told me? He said, they didn't know. They didn't know because they didn't even budget that way. Well, budget set priorities, and to me that showed it was such a low priority. They couldn't even tell me how much they spent on recreation. And so when you have almost 500,000 people in Washington County, and the Tillamook Forest is just 30 minutes away, and is a great recreation opportunity, that's where we need to shift the focus of our Board of Forestry. So, and that doesn't have anything to do with your concerns. It doesn't have anything at all to do with your concerns as far as how small woodlots are managed. So I just wanted to mention that, and I really appreciate your testifying. And everybody here is speaking for balance, and I think we can achieve it. But thank you for coming.
Thank you. And tell your employer you did a great job. Jay Ward, Les Haugesson, and Ivan Malowski.
I just saw a look of terror pass Jay Ward's face. I took the gavel from the chairman. I have in writing before me a signed statement. I promise not to adjourn the meeting while you are out of the room.
Who would like to be first?
Oh, I'll step up to the plate. Chairman Ferriola.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Ringo. First of all, just to clear the record, I no longer own a loaded gun. Good morning, Chairman. Thank you for the opportunity to address this committee. For the record, my name is Jay Ward. My address is 5825 North Greeley in Portland, Oregon. I'm here today representing the staff and 6,000 members of Oregon Natural Resources Council, a nonprofit conservation organization dedicated to keeping Oregon a special place to live, work, and raise a family. It's often said that politics makes strange bedfellows, but an unstated corollary is that politics makes for even stranger adversaries. Consider, for example, the opposition to this morning's business, the nomination of Lesa Coyne to the Board of Forestry. In 1999, then-Congressman Lesa Coyne drafted and helped to pass legislation setting federal timber targets in the Pacific Northwest at an incredible 9.6 billion board feet. That is twice the average of the 80s, which is rapidly usually described as being a time of high cutting, and 20 times what's being cut today. At that time, the timber industry was cheering Congressman Coyne in the amendment Section 318 of the Interior Appropriations Act. Now, 15 years later, Congressman Coyne's former supporters are screaming that he's actually a dogmatic and radical environmentalist. And the truth, I imagine, lies somewhere in between. Today, in spite of our past differences, I'm here to support Congressman Coyne's nomination, not because I believe him to be an ardent environmentalist, but because of his unique qualifications and variety of experiences. First, Congressman Coyne's long service in Congress and subsequent employment in government affairs and academia give him a breadth of experience that few can match. And the state is likely to need that experience, since the Bush administration signals its intent to offer the state the option of managing Oregon's nearly 2 million acres of federal inventoried roadless areas. It only makes sense that the Board of Forestry has members with experience in national forest management and national forest politics. Indeed, as politics have played such a large role in natural resource policy during the past 50 years, who better to bring that experience than a former senior member of Interior Appropriations Committee who is a congressman monitored Forest Service activities, budgets, and timber targets. Second among qualifications is what Lesa Coyne is not. Unlike six of the seven Board of Forestry members, Congressman Coyne is not receiving income from the timber industry. While this is admittedly a pretty low bar to clear, it does have the singular benefit of starting to bring the board back into compliance with state law as specified by ORS 526.009. Oregon Natural Resources Council asserts that the current board violates this statute, as board members Craig, Snyder, Hobbs, Gustina, Philippi, and unfortunately Heffernan, who by all accounts is a reasonable man who has put pretty good face on the small woodlot owners' decision-making in the board, they all appear to receive income from companies or organizations regulated under the Oregon Forest Practices Act. We applaud these board members for their service and dedication to the state, but recognizing and accepting that service does not allow the state to ignore the law. Finally, we support Congressman Coyne's nomination because in spite of the polarized nature of resource politics in Oregon, we are hopeful that someone with his experience can find a way to bridge the rhetorical and political chasm that currently afflicts our state. Congressman Coyne brings with him the relationship formed over more than 30 years in the public eye and has a reputation as a moderate and a consensus builder. Ultimately, ONRC endorses Congressman Coyne because we choose to hope for a brighter future instead of clinging to a more tumultuous past. Thank you. I'd be pleased to answer any questions, Mike.
Questions from the committee?
So it's your contention, Mr. Ward, that because of Lesa Coyne's experience at the federal level, that he'll do for private forest lands in Oregon what's been done on the federal land base?
No, I didn't make that contention. Senator Ferriero, I know I did not. I would think he would bring a perspective, especially as regards forest management at the federal level, especially if the state of Oregon ends up having a role to play in federal forest management.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman Ferrioli and members of the committee. My name is Ivan Molesky, and I represent the Sierra Club and our 23,000 members in Oregon. Our members work, live, recreate, raise families across all corners of Oregon, both rural and urban. We are testifying today to express our support for the appointment of Lesa Coyne to the Oregon Board of Forestry and to ask for your vote to confirm his appointment. The Sierra Club has long been concerned that the Board of Forestry has failed to represent the diverse interests of Oregonians that should be considered in the management of state forests. Our state forests in particular are to be managed for the greatest permanent value, and we believe that values such as clean water, healthy fisheries and fishing jobs, recreational values and recreational income are long overdue for better representation in the equation of greatest permanent value. We also believe that our private industrial forest lands need better management. We believe that the unbalanced influence of the timber industry on the Board of Forestry has created management priorities that do not reflect the broad interests of Oregonians, and that significant changes on the board are warranted. The Sierra Club endorses Mr. O'Coin's appointment because he has the background, expertise, and credibility that will help the board better represent the interests of all Oregonians, not just the timber industry. While the Sierra Club does not believe that the appointment of one member would result in the balanced Board of Forestry that most Oregonians support, the appointment of Mr. O'Coin would be a good step in the right direction. Please support Governor Korongoski's step towards bringing balance to the Board of Forestry by confirming Mr. O'Coin's appointment. Thanks for considering this statement today.
Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Mr. Helgeson, please proceed. And please limit your remarks to 2 minutes.
I will.
Thanks.
For the record, my name is Les Helgeson. I'm here representing my client today, the Native Fish Society. We're an organization dedicated to the conservation of native fish and their habitats. We like to think of ourselves as the voice of native fish here, so I swam over to represent the fish here today, too. And we would like to resoundingly and offer our unqualified support for Congressman Les O'Coin to the Board of Forestry. I should probably correct my friend and colleague David Moskowitz that you get more with less, and I think that's true in this case. A little disappointed in hearing the tone of the committee earlier here. Madam Chair, last time I was before this committee, we dealt with an appointment, and it is clear that it is a common occurrence for existing board members to be removed. We dealt with this issue on the Oregon Fish and Wildlife Commission here a year ago. So with all due respect to Mr. Heffernan, don't take it personally. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions? No. Thank you very much. Yep. I'm sorry, I'm not able to read this name.
Wayne Geezy.
Mr. Geezy, would you please come up? Mr. Hampton, would you please come up? Mr. Ivanoff, would you please come up? Okay, that's fine. Yeah. It's almost the end, so. And that's Mr. Stephen. Hi. Good morning. Well, good morning, almost afternoon. Welcome.
My name is Wayne Geezy. I'll give you a little history.
Okay.
50 years ago, this year, I served my first session in the legislature.
Aha. Uh-huh.
We were paid $50 a month. There was no per diem unless you served on an interim committee. And some people thought we were overpaid.
They still really think we're overpaid.
That really hurt a little because I really worked hard at my job. So I'll go here and try to get it down to 2 minutes.
Okay, thank you.
My name is Wayne Geezy, and I wish to oppose the appointment of Les O'Coin to the Board of Forestry and ask to reappoint Chris Heffernan, a person recognized as Tree Farmer of the Year. At my age, my mission in life is to work with the governor, legislature, agencies to establish a climate in Oregon to provide more jobs. I hope this is high on your priority list. I think the governor's advisors have given him a bum steer. I understand the governor has directed the Board of Forestry to study the possibilities of expanding federal timber harvest. If we went back to 1990 cut, you would have over 100,000 jobs paying taxes to the state of Oregon and big bucks from industry directly and indirectly involved. The present Board of Forestry is working hard to encourage large and small operators to continue growing trees and not divert their land for other uses. If you have the opportunity to check with other board members, you will find that Mr. Heffernan makes a substantial contribution to the board's responsibilities. Chris has practical experience operating several hundred acre tree farm and a member of the Oregon Small Woodlands Association. Governor Korongoski is my governor, too, and I'm not trying to fight, but offering good advice to help his agenda. In my opinion, you're not going to meet the agenda with a coin. Thank you for this opportunity to let an old man express his views.
Anytime you want to come express your views, we'll listen, Mr. Geezy.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Hampton, take
good morning,
it away.
Madam Chair and Mr. Vice Chair.
My name is John Hampton. I am the chairman of Hampton Affiliates, a private forest products company that got its start here in Oregon in 1942 in Willamina. I'd like to provide my perspective regarding Governor's nomination of Lessecoin to this forestry board. My remarks about this appointment are couched from my experience serving three full terms on the Oregon State Board of Forestry, having been appointed by three separate governors of two political parties. This appointment is not a partisan matter. I'm sorry that your colleagues are not here, because I want to encourage Democrats not to vote for this candidate because they are responding to a Democratic governor, and the Republicans not to vote against this because they are on the opposite side of the party, but rather to vote against this because I do not believe that Congressman Acoin can effectively serve the interests of the citizens of the state of Oregon from a balanced perspective because of his recent positions that are adversarial to a sustained flow of a moderate amount of timber from a rebounding asset that is having a fabulous time, renaissance done by forest lands that have been replanted by volunteers and others in the state. The former members of this board have been appointed from a very diverse background. And while it's not statutorily required, the reality is that they have put aside their own personal agendas on many, many occasions and have worked collectively and collaboratively together to bring about common sense decisions, not decisions based on the pressure or anything else, except how to arrive at consensus. To my recollection, there has never been a minority vote, there has never been a split vote, there has never been anything except a unanimous vote on any policy decisions made by this board. I suspect that will not be the case if Representative Acoin is confirmed. My first point against this is that Representative Acoin has a powerful bias which he will be unable to put aside. It's been clearly demonstrated by his vociferous report of Ballot Measure 34 proposing to dedicate half of the state's Northwest Oregon productive timberlands to preservation. Measure 34 would have impacted sustainable outputs under the existing forest plan by hundreds of millions of dollars to the state and to Oregon's counties and to the Common School Fund, a penalty we can ill afford for the value of preservation when we already have millions of acres of wilderness permanently established in the state of Oregon. Secondly, this appointment is contradictory to the governor's clearly enunciated policy of a priority to create jobs and to strengthen Oregon's economy, particularly in our rural communities. Representative Acoin had a distinguished career in the Oregon House of Representatives as a moderate with an environmental conscience. Unfortunately, since leaving Congress, he's made a radical turn to preservation rather than balanced utilization. His current position is clearly preservation. Witness his campaign, his statements in the ballot measure 34 debates last November. The public does not want this forest land in preservation, and neither does the forestry board. How could Representative Acoin support the existing compromise plan when he has just stood up for putting half of this land out of production? His position completely ignores the reality that the lands were turned over to the state to be restored and managed for the benefit of the counties within which they repose. Hundreds of millions of dollars would have gone down the tube had Measure 34 not gone down to defeat. And by the way, it took about 3 months out of my life campaigning against that myself. Current Forestry Board member Bill Hutchinson from Portland has an extraordinary, strong environmental sensitivity, but he's a completely rational pragmatist and an open-minded person with whom one can sit down and look at reality and reach consensus. Bill does a great job of representing the environmental community in a common-sense way. It's inconceivable to me that Representative Acoin, with his preservation bias, can sit down with that kind of attitude. After 7 years of study, a compromise was achieved by the present Board of Forestry to put in place the existing forest plan. While this plan is not what we preferred, we supported the plan based on the goal that was projected under the structure-based management targets that they set. It should be understood that this plan output is less than one half of what a normal industrial model would bring in economic benefits from these highly productive forest lands. With the state starting out the session with a $200 million deficit, it would be irrational to put someone on the forestry board who has the potential of damaging the forest plan, which is a product of compromise. I don't believe the representative of Coyne can put his bias aside. His congressional record is clear, but that's not what we're talking about here. I had the pleasure of working with him in eight of his congressional terms. I learned my lesson after he won the first time and went to work with him to educate him about forestry matters. And we made a lot of progress working together on resource issues during his remaining eight terms. And we did good work. We had a lot of great outputs from that. And I respect the work that he did there. But that is not his current reputation. He has established a line in the sand as a preservationist with his vocal support for ballot measure 34, which was a train wreck that we were able to stop. I want you to vote no on this confirmation. It is not good policy for the state of Oregon. We need someone with better balance, and I urge the governor to balance this board by providing the small woodlands people with the voice and the discretion by reappointing Chris Heffernan. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr.
And if there's any confusion about where I stand on this, I'd be glad to answer questions.
What I thought I heard you say, Mr. Hampton, is that while you're not happy with the harvest levels under the Tillamook-Kotsup plan, you're willing to live with it at this point.
Exactly. If they achieve the targets that were described in the final debates, we are fully in support of it.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Dave Ivanoff. I'm the Vice President of Resources for Hampton Affiliates. John's my employer.
I got a twofer here this morning.
But I'm also here as the campaign chairman for the No on 34 committee. I worked pretty hard along with a lot of other people building a broad coalition of the entire forest landowning community in the state. 100% of OFIC's members were supportive of our position, as well as much of the small woodland owning community, not to mention the numerous businesses that got on board. Our No on 34 campaign was endorsed by virtually every major daily newspaper in the state. The Portland City Club recognized that it was bad policy to pass that measure. And the margin of victory was the largest margin in a campaign season that had very controversial ballot measures on the table. At the end of the day, the public clearly understood that active, sound, sustainable forest management can be a win-win for the environment, for the economy, and jobs, and our social fabric in the state. As you know, Representative Acoin was a very strong and public proponent of ballot measure 34. In my view, the appointment of Congressman Acoin by Governor Kulongoski to this board is a repudiation of the message that Oregon's electorate made on November 2nd. In my view, it's a callous disregard to the economic and social well-being of timber-dependent communities in this state. And quite frankly, this will exacerbate the urban-rural divide that exists. One of the things that's most frustrating to me in my role as a past chair of OFIC and in my current role as trying to provide the raw material for our company sawmills is to have the public policymakers in this state fully understand that Oregon's forest product sector has not fully adjusted to the downturn in the federal timber sale outputs in the early 90s. For the last decade, many companies in Oregon have been importing wood from Washington and British Columbia. That is changing. There's additional capacity coming online in the state of Washington that is going to put at risk to further downsizing Oregon's forest product sector. If we lose additional manufacturing capacity in this state, the people that depend on our sawmill conversion facilities in order to provide the return on that asset is going to go away, and that's going to exacerbate the problem of forest land being converted to non-forest uses. In my view, Chris Heffernan has provided a very appropriate and necessary perspective to the Board of Forestry, and he's done a very good job. I respectfully request that this committee reject this nomination and strongly recommend to the governor to reappoint Chris Heffernan to the Board of Forestry. And with that, I very much thank you for the opportunity to comment.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you very much for being here. Next up, Mr. Alan Forth.
Fouch? You must be a lawyer.
No.
Oh. Just kidding. I'm just kidding. I'm one, too.
No reason to insult the man, Madam Chairman.
Mr. Gary Springer and Mr. Greg Miller.
Madam Chair?
Yes. Call the Senate. Okay, you'll have to excuse us for a few minutes. I don't know if you guys want to come forward and make yourselves at home. I'm sure Mr. Miller would be happy to entertain you while we're gone. For the record, and welcome to your Senate Rules Committee.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Madam Chair. My name is Alan Fouch, and I'm a professional forester, unless it helps me to be a lawyer. So I've got my bachelor's and master's degree in forestry, and I manage 25,000 acres of family forest land that they've owned since 1913 in the Grand Ronde area. You guys have probably all seen, I've sent you written testimony, and I just wanted to, the written testimony I've got, I apologize for the address and title. I don't do this on a general basis, but I also wrote letters to you, all the senators, concerning this appointment, and I really appreciate the responses I've gotten from most of the senators. I really appreciate it. One of the things your responses showed was concern over the balance. And the board's mandate by the Forest Program for Oregon is to be an impartial board, science-based. And so the question here seems to me, would Lessacoin provide the science-based, impartial balance to the board that we're looking? As you're aware, Mr. O'Coin has a website, and he's probably been really researched, and there's a lot of things that, you know, you can see from his website and other things on the web, which, of course, I've gone through. And one thing that did kind of bother me is I saw on Mr. O'Coin's website on February 22nd was this joke. The title of it is, "How much would you give to W?" A lobbyist on his way home from work in Washington, D.C. came to a dead halt in traffic and thought to himself, "Wow, this traffic seems worse than usual. He noticed a police car walking between the lines of stopped cars, so he rolled down his window and asked, "Officer, what's the holdup?" The officer replied, "The president is depressed, so he stopped his motorcade and was threatening to douse himself with gasoline and set himself on fire." He said no one believes the stories about why we went to war in Iraq or the worsening deficits in the economy or that his tax cuts will not help anyone except his wealthy friends. So we're taking up a collection for him. The lobbyist asked, "How much have you got so far?" The officer replied, "About 100 gallons, but a lot of folks are still siphoning." Now, Mr. O'Coin, in his earlier testimony, said, you know, he's for balance. Is this the way, Mr. O'Coin's way of being on civility in discourse? Is the month of the immolation of president the proper thing for somebody in this position to be going ahead and representing you as the Senate? Just reading the last two lines of my testimony, guiding hands such as the Board of Forestry must be composed of impartial, thoughtful, and practical members that represent all of Oregon residents, not specific interests, either liberal or conservative. Mr. O'Coin's appointment to the Board of Forestry will not bring balance to the board, but instead violate the mandate of impartiality for the board that will certainly politicize the position and alienate an already cynical public. Thank you very much.
Thank you. You must be Mr. Springer.
Yes, I am.
No relation to Dick Springer.
No, I'm not.
Okay.
Madam Chair, Senators, my name is Gary Springer. I live in Corvallis, and I work for Starker Forest there. I do not support the governor's nomination of Lessacoin to replace Chris Heffernan on the Oregon State Board of Forestry. I've submitted a letter of testimony, but I will get right to my bottom line and make a point that I think is really important, but, and I haven't heard yet today, and I hope it is an important one to you. It's a precedent-setting sort of thing having to do with Measure 34. My biggest concern when I heard of the governor's nomination had to do with the fact that Lessacoin was an advocate for Measure 34, the so-called Tillamook 50-50 initiative. Had that measure passed last November, it would have dismantled a Northwest State Forest Management Plan that was some 10 years in the making, with much scientific and public input. In contrast, the 50-50 plan was simplistic and not carefully or widely considered before being placed on the ballot. It would have put the management of our state forests on a political schedule rather than a science-based forestry schedule.
I think the point that hasn't been made yet today is that, and to me this is the worst of all, Measure 34 would have usurped the legally mandated authority of the Board of Forestry to make management decisions for state forest lands. I fail to understand why the governor would nominate a candidate to the Board of Forestry who supported a ballot measure that did that, that would have effectively neutered the Board of Forestry on state forest management. How can this be in the best interest of the public? I urge you to reject this nomination. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Springer. Mr. Miller.
For the record, my name is Greg Miller. I'm the government affairs manager for Weyerhaeuser Company. We have about 1.1 million acres in this great state, about 4,500 employees, and 40 facilities. So that ends the commercial. So you might as well figure that we're the state's largest forest landowner, and the Board of Forestry is the most important policy and regulatory board for our operations, without a doubt. We think the current board is working very well. It's doing an excellent job of carrying out Governor Kulongoski's mission that he gave to them in October of 2004. And I would encourage you, if you haven't read his presentation in front of the Board of Forestry, please do so before you vote on this confirmation. He had a great deal of praise to give to this current board. He thinks that it's a model. Particularly, he highlighted their unique consensus-making process. He said, please keep up the good work. This is all in your written testimony. I'm just going to get right to the bottom line. He had another lens from which he looked at his appointments. And I want to characterize this as a question to the committee. Does the confirmation of Mr. Alcoin, who by written and spoken word as a political commentator against many of today's forest policies, actually meet the governor's own test for a Board of Forestry appointment? The governor had this to say to the October Board of Forestry at the meeting. When appointments come up, they will always be seen through the lens of working in the consensus decision-making process. At the same time, people who have broad vision and see themselves more than just representing an interest, but representing the people of the state. I would submit to you that while we greatly respect Mr. Alcoin's right to a different opinion and to express his views, he's been so well publicized on his forest policy views that we're hard-pressed to see how he gets to consensus on this board in their unique decision-making process. We respect the governor's right to make this appointment. We don't support this appointment. Therefore, we respectfully oppose Mr. Alcoin's appointment to the Board of Forestry. And I would just add, listening to the conversation this morning, this industry has moved light years ahead of where this debate has been today. And if you don't believe it, come out, visit us, come see our facilities, and know that we're not interested in this fight in this way. And there's a lot of folks that have characterized this as a fight, and we firmly disagree about this, the way this is being characterized. We hope that you folks can get to the right answer on this. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Questions for the panel? Thank you very much for being here this morning. Next up, Susan Ash, Mark Mercier, and Mark McAllister. Good afternoon. Chair Brown, my name is Susan Ash. For the record, I am the Conservation Director of the Audubon Society of Portland. We are a member organization, a nonprofit group, with a mission to protect and lead to the enjoyment and appreciation of native birds, other wildlife, and their habitat. We have 10,000 members throughout the state of Oregon, not just in the city of Portland. I'm going to read from a joint letter from my colleagues. It's very, very brief. But before I do so, I want to make some personal comments. I do have a master's degree in forestry. My family is a small woodland owner. Hearing all of the debate about the us versus them today has been really disheartening for me. And I'm picturing my grandfather, who is 80 years old, who owns a walnut tree farm in Kansas. If he were to see me up here, he would have tears in his eyes because he feels like
we've come a long way in this us versus them type of thing in his many years. And I'm really hoping that, you know, in the years to come, through the Board of Forestry, through the manager of our state lands, we're going to get away from this us versus them. We're going to find common ground, and we're going to build on what we have, what, our values that we have together, and work on collaboration and restoration. The Audubon Society has no real issues with Chris Heffernan. We would recommend that if so many people would like to see him reappointed, we would easily support creating a vacancy, replacing a member that currently has direct ties to the industry. However, I have attended many Board of Forestry meetings, and I have yet to walk away from a meeting where Chris has taken a dominant or particularly effective role in a Board of Forestry meeting, and that's my main criticism. I've had conversations with Chris. I respect him. We have no problem with him being on the board. Again, I don't think that this is the time and the place for him to be reappointed in that capacity. I'm not going to go over my comments, Audubon Society of Portland's comments. I will let you all read them. I'm going to read from my this letter that our colleagues have supported on behalf of Leslie Coyne's appointment to the Board of Forestry. This letter is an expression of support for Mr. Leslie Coyne's appointment to the Oregon Board of Forestry from the organizations listed below. Mr. O'Coyne's appointment would be an excellent first step to bringing the Board of Forestry into compliance with statute, as well as adding a credible, experienced, and balanced voice to the board. Mr. O'Coyne is an individual of excellent character with a long and distinguished history of service to the great state of Oregon. As a congressman, Mr. O'Coyne acted on numerous natural resource issues and served on the Appropriations Committee that managed the U.S. Forest Service's budget and timber targets. His record on environmental natural issues drew high praise as well as stinging criticisms from all sides. As a commentator for Jefferson Public Radio and a professor at Southern Oregon University, he has demonstrated his passion, expertise, and commitment to solving forestry issues in Oregon. We very much urge you to support Governor Kulongoski's nomination and vote to appoint Mr. O'Coyne to the Oregon Board of Forestry. I'm going to read the names and the organizations that have signed this letter. I'm one of them. Jay Ward, Oregon Natural Resources Council. Jason Miner, Oregon Trout. Noah Greenwald, Center for Biological Diversity. Penny Wind, Umpqua Watersheds. Jessica Hamilton, Oregon League of Conservation Voters. Dave Moskowitz and Marianne Guest, Wild Salmon Center. Bill Bakke and Les Helgeson, Native Fish Society. Tom Wolf, Oregon Council, Trout Unlimited. Chuck Willard, Coast Range Association, Daniel Hall, American Lands Alliance, and Brent Davis from EcoTrust, who is also a small woodland owner. Thank you.
Question, Madam Chair.
Senator Ferrielli.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Quote, as a commentator for Jefferson Public Radio and a professor at Southern Oregon State University, he has demonstrated his passion, expertise, and commitment to solving forestry issues in Oregon. These are the Jefferson Public Radio commentaries. Is it your position that these organizations that have signed the letter suggesting that he's demonstrated his passion and expertise in solving forestry issues is an endorsement of his commentaries?
No, I would not say that. I would say that we have heard some good points that he has made that would demonstrate his abilities and his wide level of understanding of a variety of natural resource issues.
Madam Chair,
Senator Ferrielli.
Comments like Kauschwitz, for instance.
Excuse me?
Comments like Kauschwitz, for instance.
I don't see how that pertains to my testimony. He was a commentator for Jefferson Public Radio who did that make that point. I do not follow grazing issues. I serve on the State Forest Advisory Committee and will probably have to follow those types of issues. I am also now being appointed to an ad hoc advisory committee to the Board of Forestry on sustainable forest management indicators, so I will be involved in those types of issues. I would not like to make a comment referring to that particular word because it is a very controversial word, and I don't think it's one that should really be part of this.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Ferrielli. Mr. Mercier.
Good morning, Madam Chairman. Well, I guess I'm still in the morning area here. And the other gentlemen of the committee as well. My name is Mark Mercier. I reside in Grand Ronde, Oregon. And if anybody are wondering where that's at, if you're going to Highway 18, using that to get to Lincoln City, you'll see a massive facility called Spirit Mountain, you know what. Grand Anza, 1 mile west of there. Enough of that. I'm here to represent no particular group or entity today. I did, however, serve on the Tribal Council for the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde. And between 1985 and 1996, I served in a capacity as a tribal chairman. And beginning in 1985, we started working with Oregon's congressional delegation, including Mr. Lessa Coyne, since he served as a U.S. representative of the 1st District, where we were then located. The tribe immediately embarked on an effort to get some of its original lands back. And these lands that the tribe pursued were all timber lands that were owned and managed by the Department of the Interior and the BLM. Well, it didn't take long for a great deal of controversy to erupt as a result of some of the timber industry had cited some concerns about our ability to export logs or our inability to effectively manage those particular lands for timber production. Now, you may recall Mr. Coyne did a highlight on a meeting that was took place in the gymnasium of a local grade school out there. Now, the only thing I'm going to add to that if the tension were any thicker that evening, well, you could have needed a chainsaw to get through that because there was such a polarization between the Indian and the non-Indian community. Well, to make a long story short, the bill finally became law, thank God. And after the dust settled, you know, the tensions more or less diffused. And since then, you know, for the last 16 years, the tribe has effectively managed that land for timber production. Furthermore, in working with a neighboring timber company, which would be Hampton Lumber Company, we have jointly embarked on efforts to, like, replace some of the stream culverts with either bridges, or if that's geologically prohibitive, to put another culvert. But they replaced or helped provide a lot of the materials necessary, like gravel and other items, you know, to secure the culverts in the place. So I can proudly say that while we're still aggressively managing a timberland, that the tribe is doing an excellent job of doing some stream enhancement projects and other wildlife enhancement projects as well that have no adverse effect on the timber production. But just speaking for myself, I just want to say that I'm very proud of some of the things that not only has Les has done for our community and tribe, but for the whole state of Oregon as well. And so that concludes my testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Messier. Who's the largest employer in Polk County today?
I'm sorry?
Who's the largest employer in Polk County today?
Well, I would have to say, you know, that facility, Spirit Mountain Casino.
Okay. That's my understanding as well, Mr. Messier. I happen to serve on the Spirit Mountain Trust Fund, and it's been a really incredible experience to be giving back to the 11 service counties. Thank you.
Well, see, as just a common person driving to the parking lot, I kind of dread the encounters with the valets.
I won't make a comment on that. Next.
Good morning, Senators. I'm Mark McCollister, and I'm here today on behalf of Oregon Trout and our statewide membership. In deference to your time, I'm going to keep it short and just say that we strongly support the nomination of Les O'Coyne to the Board of Forestry. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for this panel? Thank you very much. Appreciate you being here. Last but not least, and I would ask Mr. Wilkerson, Ray Wilkerson, and Mr. Robert McNitt, Mr. Greg Addington, and Mr. Terry Witt to come on up. You realize that that's four of you, and there's only three chairs. If someone could bring a chair as you come up, we would much appreciate it. I think I'm just going to carry it.
It's fine by me.
Okay.
Whatever you want.
I don't want to get you involved in some of the dynamics that are happening. Good morning. Thanks for your patience. Who'd like to start?
I'll volunteer, Senator Brown. I'm Ray Wilkerson with the Oregon Forest Industries Council, and we do not support this nomination. I've passed out written testimony that includes a lot of the points that you've already heard about at length this morning, so I won't repeat them. So I'd just like to make one point, if I could, for the committee. And I think there's a lot of things that are unfortunate about this situation that we find ourselves in. And I think one of the most unfortunate things is that seven good people on this Board of Forestry's reputation has been maligned somewhat. And it's based on the notion that somehow there's a lack of balance and that these folks somehow are, at the expense of the public interest, tilting in the direction of the timber industry in their decision-making. We have asked the supporters of this nomination, and we have asked the governor's office repeatedly for an example of that. What has this board done, or what has this board failed to do that would support the notion that they are out of balance and that they are not fairly and with discretion representing the public interest? And the fact is, Madam Chairman, there is no evidence of that. And the reason there is no evidence of that is because it is not out of balance. These people are good people. They're a good team. They're trying to do the right thing. And because of this controversy, their reputation has been impugned and besmirched, and I think that's highly unfortunate. So that's what I'd like to say. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Wilkerson. Next.
Yeah, my name is Bob McNett. I live at 40827 Huntley Road, Staten, Oregon, northern Linn County. And Madam Chair and Committee, I am very much pleased that I have a chance to speak to you today. I have to apologize for basically reading because I can get off task and I'll go over my 2 minutes. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. I oppose the nomination of Lessa Coyne to the Board of Forestry. You have my written testimony. I would like to take 2 minutes to add a few personal comments. I was a forester for over 30 years. I worked for the little W, Willamette Industries. I used to like to rate us on the forest management scale. Starker Forest and Longview Fiber were good, but we were better. And the 1980s were the golden age of forestry. This was a time of scientific leaps in forest resource knowledge and great advancements in management techniques. Capital funding was readily available. It was exciting times to be a dirt forester. Then the environmentalists began their run at shutting down harvesting. Their actions diverted attention from forward management progress to spending resource, time, and capital trying to be sure landowners could harvest at all to recover investments. The alleged reasons for attacking the forest resource industry were many. Owls, murrelets, fish, and you know the drill. As time goes on, it becomes more and more apparent that these crises were fabrications at best. The book, The Skeptical Environmentalist, the author, a founder of Greenpeace, by the way, explains how misguided and overregulation responsible resource use is developed in developed countries, results in detrimental effects in the undeveloped portions of the world by siphoning off financial and human resources that are better spent helping the people in these undeveloped countries. His examples included air and water quality as well as forest resources. We do not have to visit an underdeveloped country to see the effect of such actions. Just drive down to Linn County or over to Eastern Oregon to see closed mills, struggling communities. On your way, stop on the San Anne Pass and observe the devastation of catastrophic wildfire. This fire was a waste of resource and opportunity. It is an example of irresponsible mismanagement incurred by unaccountable environmental advocates. This picture, folks, is a legacy of less alkaline environmentalism. It reflects the influence of the extreme environmentalists segment and promotes the arrogant ignorance of the intellectual elite. Such an extreme position is not appropriate for a member of the Board of Forestry, a policy-making body that is responsible to private landowners of this great state. I beg you to oppose this nomination. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nitt, and we take delight in working with your daughter here at the Oregon Capitol. So.
Well, thank you. She trained me well.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Greg Addington. I'm an Associate Director of Governmental Affairs for the Oregon Farm Bureau. Farm Bureau is the state's largest general agricultural organization. We represent over 8,800 full-time farm and ranch families from around the state. And we thank you for the opportunity to be here. I, too, have written testimony being presented to you, so I will try to abbreviate my comments and let you refer to those. The Oregon Farm Bureau opposes the nomination of Lessa Coyne to replace Chris Heffernan on the Oregon Board of Forestry. Many of our members are not only operate farms and ranches, but also have associated small woodlots as well as larger tracts of forest land. They are people just like Chris Heffernan. The perspectives of family forest landowners are unique, as are the perspectives of Eastern Oregon landowners. Replacing Chris Heffernan with Lessa Coyne is a slap in the face to rural Oregon in general and to Eastern Oregon in particular. While we believe Mr. Coyne's nomination is being put forth solely because of his record as an activist, we have a broader concern about setting the precedent of filling state boards and commissions with unqualified advocates rather than individuals who have expertise and experience in the area their board will oversee. Mr. Coyne is quoted in the February 25th edition of the Oregonian as saying that the Bush administration's, quote, official policy on nature has been to dig it, cut it, or pollute it, end quote. Despite this kind of radical and uninformed statement, the governor has said that Mr. Coyne knows the issues and could help build partnerships with the federal government. Our question is, what kind of diplomatic skills do Mr. Coyne's remarks demonstrate, and what kind of balance? This appointment is divisive, disruptive, and clearly contrary to the best interests of Oregon's forest. And we urge you to vote no on the nomination. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Witt.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Terry Witt. I'm Executive Director of Oregonians for Food and Shelter. And I would just like to say I'm glad to see that Lessa Coyne leads our legislative update. OFS represents a broad coalition of thousands of members, two-thirds of which are natural resource producers, both in agriculture and in forestry. I think appointment of Mr. Coyne to the Board of Forestry is a double negative. Number one, I think it removes a tried and true contributor to the Board of Forestry by removing Chris Heffernan. Number two, I think it's a negative to replace him with a person that has demonstrated outward bias and often an advocate of positions that are not in the best interest of a balanced forest policy for all Oregonians. I think Mr. Coyne has a long record of commentaries that have been published that I think are pretty hard to duck. The one that I think is most telling is one that was written in 2004 where he was criticizing State Forester Marvin Brown, making a comment about how he did not believe in the management role that State Forester Brown did on Tillamook Forest, and he said, quote, another case of the public trust being put in the hands of someone whose background is far from neutral. I find that a very interesting comment in light of what we're talking about today, because I think if Mr. Coyne would look in the mirror, that same phrase could well fit his position today. I was struck by some of the comments that Mr. Coyne made today about how he's such a moderate and how he's such a proponent of conflict resolution. If you look at his recent actions and his recent writings, I think they repeatedly demonstrate just the opposite. He often polarizes issues with his caustic and often character assassination commentaries rather than work towards a middle ground or a balanced approach. I respect Congressman Coyne's accomplishments when he was representing Oregon in Washington, D.C., but I want to comment and make sure that people recognize those were prior to 1992. And there's a phrase that many of us use, and it says, we understand what you've done in the past, but what have you done for me lately? And I would say, look at what Mr. Coyne has done lately and what his positions have been lately, not what he did while he was representative in the U.S. Congress back in decades ago. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Questions? All right. Thank you very much. Anyone else in the audience wishing to testify? Okay. With that, we'll close a public hearing, and we'll be at ease until Senator Atkinson gets here, but I anticipate he's only got about 2 minutes. Work session? Yes, it's appointment. Thank you. Senate Rules Committee, March 8th, back to order. Open a work session on the appointment of Lesser Coyne to the State Board of Forestry. Senator Ringdahl.
Madam Chair, I move the appointment of Lesser Coyne to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Ringo moves the appointment of Lesser Coyne to the floor of the Senate with the recommendation that the appointment be confirmed.
Discussion. Yes, ma'am.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I thought the testimony was absolutely excellent today. I want to commend the chair for offering the opportunity for all the folks who came here to air their testimony. I think that's an extraordinary exercise in patience. I thought that the membership stayed with the issue and very engaged. So I'd like to commend her for her chairmanship of this committee. I also thought Mr. O'Coin bared up rather well under the circumstances. But, Madam Chairman, I think that this issue is a real problem for Oregon. I'd like to compliment Mr. Coyne. I see him as the polar opposite of Lars Larson, and I think he'll consider that a tremendous compliment. I know Lars Larson will consider this a tremendous compliment.
He's smart, Lars, isn't he?
What you see depends on where you stand. But I wouldn't suggest that we put Lars on any board or commission in the state of Oregon. I heard Mr. Coyne say that he believes, for the most part, that with some exceptions, that foresters are not environmentalists, and that ranchers are merely alarmist about the issue of wolves. But good science is produced by good scientists, and good scientists tend to be the ones that agree with Mr. O'Coin, and that bad scientists disagree. And the examples there are John Sessions and I just remember the other one, but he was the one that agreed, so he was a good scientist. I think that Mr. Coyne did, in fact, serve a moderate position between factions in Washington, D.C., but the deal back then was the art of the deal. The deal was the deal. And the deal was wilderness designations for timber cut. And finding the middle ground there was a matter of let's make a deal. So I'm looking at this hearing, and I'm looking at this appointment, and I'm thinking to myself that this is a political appointment. It will be a partisan vote, and I think what it does is it reignites a very unfortunate chapter in Oregon's history, and that's the timber wars. I don't know why we have to do this. I don't know why we need to go backwards on reigniting the timber wars, but it seems to me that bad news comes in threes, and I would suggest that the Board of Higher Education appointment, the Marine Board appointment, and now the Board of Forestry appointment is the set of three that we get here that just aren't very good for Oregon. And I think more than any other thing, that this appointment defines the governor's thinking about natural resource management and maybe even about rural people. So I will be opposing this. I don't think that was any mystery to the chair and perhaps the committee members, and not to Mr. Coyne, I'm sure. I heard something today that I thought was of value in this discussion, and that is if there were a way to revisit this issue and not rush to judgment, perhaps an honest discussion of the makeup of the board and of the decision to retain Chris Heffernan and perhaps the substitution of other members is a way we could move forward without the rancor. But I feel very strongly that the governor wants to jam the ball, partisan politics being what they are, that the majority party will. It has their marching orders, and this is the cliff they want to march off.
So that being said, Madam Chairman, I would welcome an opportunity to revisit the composition of the Board of Forestry with the eye toward retaining Chris Heffernan as the only small woodlands voice on the board. And I think as other members spoke to the issue, including Senator Beyer, I think that would cause the vocal opposition and dedicated opposition of Mr. O'Coin to more or less evaporate.
Thank you, Senator Farrelly. I believe that bill is in Senator Ringo's committee. I believe, given the conversation today, that we can have a hearing on that issue, and hopefully both sides can come together and reach an agreement on any changes to the Forestry Board. Senator Ringo, do you have a comment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have been disappointed with this hearing because it has certainly heightened the awareness of the divide in our state, and it brings us back to the days of the timber wars, and that's not good for either side. I don't think the appointment, though, of Les O'Coin has raised the timber wars. I think it's those who have come with such anger and such animosity and such unreasoned opposition that has revived the specter of the timber wars, and that's what's been disappointing to me. I think a lot of the opposition has been brought by people who are not informed as to Mr. O'Coin's reasoned approach to dealing with public policy problems. The very last panel gave testimony I thought was particularly disappointing in that it referred to Mr. O'Coin's criticism of the Bush administration's environmental record, which apparently was intended to say that the Bush administration had a good environmental record. The truth is that the first administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency, Christine Todd Whitman, resigned her position because she was at such odds with the Bush administration on environmental policy on a wide range of things relating to water quality, relating to air quality, relating to a number of items that directly impact human health that cause cancers among the public. And for this to be raised as a reason to vote to oppose Les O'Coin because he criticized the Bush administration's environmental record is absurd in the extreme. Mr. O'Coin has a long and respected record of reasoned public policy, and he would be a very well-received and effective member on the Board of Forestry.
Thank you. Any further comments? And I do remind members that you have an opportunity to speak on the floor when this appointment comes forward. Senator Shields.
Yeah, I appreciate the chance to make a comment or two, Madam Chair. I want to say to everybody that I appreciate the diversity of points of view this morning. I consider people on both sides of the issue, many here, to be friends. I particularly agree with Ray Wilkerson when he said that this is an unfortunate circumstance in that nobody should be maligning the present Board of Forestry, and it's unfortunate that that's happened as a consequence. Having said all of those things, I think we've heard some overly sensitive comments. It was strange to me to hear brought in as testimony a joke that was on the Internet that millions of people received on their email, the joke about gathering up some gas. It was nothing but passing on a joke. But we also heard hard comments, mean comments, uncalled for comments. How would any of us like to sit here and be called an arrogant, ignorant elite? I challenge us to treat each other better than that. I think we can do better than that. I don't know if Lars Larson would ever want to be appointed to anything if he had to sit through this kind of grilling. I think we can do better. Agree or disagree, I think we can be more respectful of one another. It's been asked, how can Congressman O'Coin lend to consensus on the Board of Forestry? I would like to suggest that he could do that because he understands the different roles he's played during his life. He was a policymaker, then he was a commentator. Then he gets appointed to a role where he'll be a policymaker again. For 31 years, I was a preacher. It's a lot different to preach a sermon than to come down here and make votes. I know the difference. I'm sure Les knows the difference. With regard to the question of how he could have supported ballot measure 34 and now say that he supports structure-based management, and suggested he can do that the same way most of us on this committee and in the legislature who opposed ballot measure 37 understand that it passed. And now we need to find a way to save land use planning generally while trying to figure out how to sanely implement ballot measure 37. We all do this. We have to do this. I'd close with one sentence, Madam Chairman. There's an old song that says, give peace a chance. I'd like us to tone down the rhetoric, recognize that the governor has spoken, and give less a chance. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Shields. Senator Atkinson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I can't go without speaking if all the politicians are speaking.
I'm not, Senator Atkinson.
Oh, you want to. I appreciate all this. I have had lots of friends on both sides come and testify. People have driven all the way from Southern Oregon on both sides, environmental concerns, timber sides. And I just let me say that I don't like anyone to be demonized. I'm uncomfortable with that. As we make policy, you know, I am nervous, though, about a few things. I'm nervous with how the governor's been operating. This is not a reflection on his appointment. But I was there. I was one of the, I think I was the only no vote for Goldschmidt in the hearing, at a protest for how the executive branch was running, railroading that through. I was very uncomfortable with that. And on this particular appointment, we've had the same thing where it's been posted before I had a first reading, all those things. Russell Sadler was a journalist who took lots of swings at my family and was part who unfairly put me in a box that I've had to crawl out of the best of my ability for 7 years around here and establish myself as my own. When he came up, I actually called him on the phone and talked to him. And I ultimately voted for him both out of this committee and on the floor of the Senate, much to the despise of many people on the right side of the aisle. But I figured that I was not going to be petty. That's not how I operate. No one should be demonized and start fresh. I'm very concerned with this, the timing of this, with how fast this is. It's been my experience in 7 years on the Rules Committee that we have taken time. Even I remember on ODF&W, someone who we ultimately confirmed, we actually waited a month so we could vet all the issues. We haven't been able to do that on this one. So I know the votes are here. I know that this is all done. I wish Congressman McCoy the best as we go forward, but I'm going to just out of where I've been over the last year, remain a no.
Thank you. Thank you for being consistent, Senator Atkinson.
Thank you.
Any further comments? Would you please call the roll?
Senator Atkinson.
No.
Senator Ringo.
Aye.
Senator Shields.
Aye.
Vice Chair Ferriero.
No.
Chair Brown.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes. Okay. Any further business come before the committee? Thank all of you for hanging in there during this long morning. With that, the committee is adjourned.
I am. I'm generous.